it's Yogi Bear. Good morning. I hope you're having an awesome Friday and an excellent start to your weekend. With me, in all of her glory, is the great Leanne Moll.
Oh, I've changed my name. It's now Beryl Murphy.
Oh, why did you decide on Beryl Murphy?
I literally decided on it in the last 2 seconds.
Somebody messaged me yesterday. I almost like deputized you to do it. She wanted to know where we get all the Sylvia clips because she wants to watch them.
Goodness.
And I said, I didn't have the heart to reply, and I'm not replying to every email or message. I feel like saying they're all over the place. Just type in Sylvia Brown, and you'll be inundated. Mm. And I've even stopped playing them on the show because I think we've kind of overdone.
I did see a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yes, where they did a parody of her, right?
Yes.
Yeah, very
but
good.
But that's all, I think. Otherwise, we've covered it.
But I brought her up because her name's almost like Beryl Murphy. Sylvia Brown. Beryl Murphy.
Yeah. Brown.
How are you, ass?
All good.
Are you?
Glad it's the weekend. It's a very, very, very busy time of year.
Oh, my God. I just realized that the other day. So I've got to be in Cape Town today. I'm going down for just the day, today and tomorrow. Then next weekend, I accepted. You know when you accept things like months ago?
Yeah, and you think and at the time.
You're like, it's November. You know, it's not the end of the world. I'll get there on time. It'll be fine.
You picture yourself in a happy place at said event.
Yeah. And as everybody who's watched this show for more than 5 seconds knows, my favorite thing is to not go to things.
Mm.
So when I accepted this, and I'm excited about it, don't get me wrong. You know, I know I'll have fun. It's like when I went away with the family 2 weekends ago. And we were all together in this beautiful place I think it's in the Waterberg or somewhere near there. I was looking around. I'm like, I'm so lucky and happy. But the day before, I was like, oh, I don't want to go on this weekend. So I'm starting to realize, like, it's all in my head.
Yeah, it is. It's the starting.
And it is my favorite time of year, so I mustn't complain too much. I love Christmas. I love the holidays. I love that summer vibe. I love everything about it. That's completely undiminished. But I can't help it. Like, when something comes along, I always go, I'd rather choose not to do that. And I remember an old version of myself that would say, fuck it, let's go to everything. Let's do all the things, you know?
And not enough things.
Yeah.
What else can I do? Remember Googling, what can I do?
Well, there's massive pressure now because we've got, you know, Christmas presents to think about. We've got holidays to think about. All things that cost you money.
Mm.
But, you know, for many people, it's also it's a tough time of year because you've got – maybe you don't get leave. There are lots of people who are working through. And then I think about, you know, the general economic hardship most people are going through. And it's something to consider. It doesn't make – you know, just because you – it's Christmas. Doesn't make you feel better about the fact that your bank account is at zero, you know?
Yeah. I've been thinking about that. How does it work if there is like a global crisis in terms of money?
Oh, thank God. I thought you were going to ask me how banking works and I would have been stuck.
Credits versus debits. when the cost of living has gone up, can a company afford to give you a raise because of that? Because surely their costs have also gone up.
Yeah, they can't afford to give you a raise is the short answer. And for many people, they're dependent on the you know, a bonus or a raise or whatever. But in this economy, I don't even think that's on the table.
Mm.
You know, unless you work for government where they just automatically crank it up and then the taxpayer has to foot the bill. I saw SARS crowing again about how much money they've brought in. And I was like, guys, just shut up. Like, if you've had a massively successful tax collection, shut up about it. The South African public are not going to go, oh, I'm so relieved.
SARS has done so well this year.
I was having sleepless nights over SARS not collecting enough of our money that they didn't work for.
You hear about SARS? I think they should be rewarded.
That's exactly what I've never said in my life. And I'll guarantee you the people at SARS who probably are doing a good job. I mean, it's an evil job. You're an evil person.
Very, very bad.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you choose to work for – thanks, James. How are you? Oh, look, there's producer James. Look, there he is.
He exists.
Yeah, he's a real person. And producer Flex is in the actual controls. He's in the controls there. He's making things happen. These guys have been working so hard. Oh, okay. I just want to get this off my chest quickly. We'll get back to like
SARS,
economics and SARS and Christmas and all that stuff in a second. The show is the numbers are looking absolutely fantastic. And I know it pissed a lot of people off that we decided to go to one show a week. And they think it's us being lazy. And as I explained at the time, it was a gamble because it would have pissed a lot of people off, mm-hmm. which it did. I still get messages. I got one the other day. I got an email from a guy who's like, oh, well, if you don't put timestamps and cut your show up into like easy digestible 5 minutes, I'm not there for that bullshit you and Leanne talk wow. about first thing in the show. And if you want to lose me forever. I was like, what are you, like my girlfriend? Lose me forever? But the numbers are awesome. And I know I don't say this often enough, but probably because running a business has made me a bit harder and tougher than I should be.
Hmm.
I don't express how glad and how grateful and how lucky we are to do this and how lucky I am to have the people who watch and listen to the show every morning. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't come around often, and maybe you could record this and every time I'm being an absolute cunt, you can just play this to remind yourself that I'm not worth giving up on, as that email earlier suggested. But thank you. You know, it's this the reason we do this show. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a show.
No, it wouldn't be. We'd be joining each other in a room at the crack of dawn.
It would be so sad. Yeah, it would be so sad. So I'm delighted to say things are working out really well. We launched a brand new season of Blind History. I think it's season 8 we're on at the moment.
Now, what percentage of history have you tapped into so far with Leanne. Blind History?
So
is it endless?
It's endless. You discover new things about people who you didn't know their names until you read it 10 minutes ago. And then you suddenly discover that there are books written about these people, that there are episodes in their lives that are endlessly fascinating.
Is there anybody who knows
all of
most
history?
Of the history?
No, I saw this ties into podcasts in general, but I saw one of my favorite authors is a guy called Tom Holland, who's written a couple of brilliant books, including Dominion, which is a story about the influence of Christianity on history for the last 2,000 years. He's a phenomenal and extraordinarily talented academic, a man who's published wide-ranging and insightful papers on all aspects of history, particularly ancient, particularly the influence of Christianity. But his knowledge expands way beyond those borders. And he was interviewing another person who I've got huge admiration for. She seems like she's kind of grumpy, but I wouldn't blame her. She spent
You know the history of the world, it can make you grumpy.
That's it. She spent her life devoted to particularly ancient Rome, but she's a wealth of knowledge. Her name is Mary Beard. And actually, Anthony Medera gave me the most amazing gift about 3 years ago. He's the guy I do Blind History
yes.
with. And he gave me a book which he'd got from her that's signed. And it's one of my, you know, nobody else would know, but it's one of my favorite things.
She's still alive or is she?
She's alive. No, she's alive. And she was talking to Tom Holland about Rome and about things that I thought I knew. Julius Caesar, yeah, gladiators, the revolts of Spartacus, things like that. And I just suddenly realized I know nothing. Which just proves, to answer your question in a very roundabout way, that there are so many things to know and learn.
Oh, and then you paint it with a different brush too, so you can know history.
Yeah.
But then, like you say, the effects of Christianity on history.
Right.
The effects of
yeah.
Hinduism on the Far East.
I mean, buildings, toilets. You could talk about the history of toilets.
Yeah.
And we could be here for 3 or 4 hours. Don't worry, we're not going to talk about toilets for 3 or 4 hours.
I was just about to tell a story.
You're just woken up on a Friday. You're like, oh, I'm so tired after all these weeks at work and holidays can't come soon enough. And now these bastards are talking about toilets for 3 hours. Don't worry, it's not going to happen. Actually, while we're talking about what is going to happen on the show this morning, we've got Dr. Hanan. He always helps us to get our heads right. Then we've got a friend of mine who I think you remember, Munwabisi Tete. BC?
BC. Crazy.
He used to do a show on Cliff Central all those years ago.
Oh, wow, yes.
He owns Black with a Q.
Yes.
Very, very talented and passionate businessman. He's got a lot to say. And he was once in the Guatemala Cricket Club. He was once the chairman, right? Is that right? Guatemala Cricket Club. I mean, among other things. And he's got some amazing things to talk to us about. So he's going to pop in a little later on. Also, Gabriel Krauser, who you might remember from a couple of burning platforms, where he's the one who looks like Jesus, has a very interesting take on all kinds of local politics, works with the Institute of Race Relations. We're going to have a little bit of a catch-up with him because it is G20 time. I don't know if you've noticed all the ads. Now, let me ask you this.
There was one ad. There was, and it was pulled down very quickly. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, that's the one that that Solidarity put up, right?
Yes.
Where they basically said what the government are doing and then the government didn't want them to say what they're doing.
Yeah.
So the government in this country has, I think it's 100...
Welcome
to the G20. There are 122 race laws that actively discriminate against people in South Africa, right? Something like that. I don't know if it's 122 or if it's 22. The fact is our country, South Africa, has more race laws on the books than any other country in the world.
It said, welcome to the most race-regulated country in the world.
There we go. So that is true. And, of course, some people will argue the merits of that and say, oh, but it's not against black people, therefore it's not race laws. But they are laws that specify that person A, insert your color at will, but it doesn't matter because the law is discriminatory. The whole idea of discrimination is that you separate people on some basis. You judge and evaluate them, right? Yeah, you are discriminating in terms of who you decide to date. Mm. You are discriminating in terms of who you decide to do business with. There it is. Welcome to the most race-regulated country in the world. So they had to take it down, right?
Yeah, very quickly. It didn't last long.
And the government, virtually in the same week, I think it was Paul Mashatile who said, yes, we have expropriation without compensation, and no, we're not going to change our position. So they are doubling down, and therefore I applaud Solidaritet for that. But I wasn't going to go down this path this morning because I don't want to be endlessly political, just like I don't want to talk about toilets. The two go together.
I don't know which I'd prefer to talk about, but in any case.
But the story is, and I drove under a billboard yesterday on my way to an appointment, and it was advertising the G20.
Yes.
So, again,
so it would have been government putting that up.
Right. Who's their market for this?
None of us are going.
No, exactly. What are you trying to sell the ordinary person in their car on the N1 highway, for example?
Are you trying to get more people to attend?
Yeah, what do you want us to hang around? I don't have any invites to you.
Where is it?
We don't know. And frankly, even if you did know, would you go?
I don't know, one of those things.
Okay, the point is, those billboards cost at the low end. And I think if you've got a really good deal and you work with an agency and you know the guy who owns the billboards, you can maybe get it for 50 grand for, 2 weeks. I guarantee you it's not 50 grand because everyone's putting on their slice, as always happens with government, which is why government is the most expensive way to get something done every time. So let's call it 100, okay? Because that's still a conservative estimate for government to pay. Let's say they've got 100 of these billboards up all over the country or all over Johannesburg. It wouldn't be impossible to imagine that. You can keep adding zeros. The point is, who is this for?
Yeah.
You know, the world leaders who are coming here, they know it's the G20. Otherwise, they would do what Mexico, Argentina and the US have done and said, thanks for the invite, but we're not going to come to your party. And they are the first of, I think, a few other countries that will drop out because these talk shops, we all know they achieve nothing. Mm. What they do achieve is further down the line, you end up with some regulation that prevents you from doing something you should be entitled to do. And a bunch of bureaucrats have got together and discussed how they can use the G20 as an excuse to make your life more complicated. So if anything, if government were clever about this again, they would shut up about it. They wouldn't go telling everybody, just like I said with SARS earlier. Rather be quiet. If you've got the G20 on and later on we discover that you've brought in some new regulation around energy that has made it more expensive for the people of South Africa, we would have preferred if you'd shut the fuck up.
You see, there's nothing to be proud of that they can advertise at the moment. So hosting an event, just hosting an event is the biggest achievement.
And by the way, they're not doing anything because they'll hire other people to actually do the event. Just like they hired other people to buy them those billboards. Just like they've hired other people to tidy up Joburg. Because where are those people the rest of the time?
Exactly. I saw another bunch of people digging weeds out of a tiny pavement.
It's maddening. I do not know anyone who is excited about the G20 or who thought, oh, well, I didn't know about it until I saw that big billboard. And I don't know anyone. Some people are not just finding out about it. They're really unhappy about it. Where is that? Is that in the CBD? Wow. Well, where? What do they think the people of South Africa feel about their stupid G20? You know how we feel? We feel like the president of Mexico, the president of Argentina, and Donald Trump do about it. Waste of time and money. Wow. By the way, look how shit that looks. I mean, they paid for that. What, a concrete thing that they've paid for? Look at those crappy flowers they've planted around that. They didn't even make any effort. That's just, you know, again.
I think I've put more effort in burying my cat in the garden.
your cat's grave, which I've seen, looks better than that. Leanne's cat's grave. And she didn't charge a tender price for it, right? She didn't charge that thing. Just put it back on screen. That fucking disgrace.
Lots involved. They're pole people. And by the way, nursery people.
Yeah, but hang on. Even without the graffiti, which is what government are upset about, I just want to give you some feedback from the ordinary people of South Africa government. There is no one starving in a township, working in Sandton, living, trying to make ends meet, worrying about the economy that you've mismanaged into hell. There's no one in this country, no citizen of South Africa, is excited about that that you see on screen now. No one's going, oh, I'm so glad we've got that. Not one person. So when it gets ruined by graffiti, you consider it an improvement. Consider it an opportunity for you to get some feedback from the people.
At least it carries some kind of opinion. Or...
And we have the right to deface it because we paid for it.
True.
I'm not a fan of graffiti. I don't like people to destroy things. Mm. But that is so ugly to start off with. Even if you take away the graffiti, tell me who goes, wow, what a work of art. Who? Name a person. All right, so that's that's off my chest.
Yeah.
Feeling a bit better about that now. Let's take a look at some other things that are coming up this morning. We're going to talk a little bit about, we've got it. So apparently 3i Atlas, the alien spacecraft.
Oh, yes.
Again, my belief that this is something special has waned somewhat since the last time we spoke. Some people are reporting that it like exploded. Some people are saying it did speed up behind the sun, or it slowed down behind the sun. Or, I mean, there are people who are still holding a candle.
So there's still eyes on it.
I've lost interest, just like I did in the G20 about 5 minutes after it was announced. But if you're still a big fan and maybe you want to fill me in and maybe you want to try and get me enthusiastic about 3i Atlas again, I would love to hear from you. I blame Gord. I mean, he came on the show and told me about it and I was like, oh my God, I didn't know about this. The aliens are coming. Turns out it's a bit of a damp squib. you told me. All right. You said, yeah. I told you so. Yeah. All right. So, let's just take a look at a couple of things that are in the news. Sniper tourists allegedly paid £70,000 to shoot civilians in human safaris. This is an actual story.
What?
Yeah. Italian prosecutors are investigating shocking claims that wealthy people who call themselves sniper tourists. I mean, it's the Hunger Games. That's what this is, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we start at the beginning with hunting and
you
pay to go and shoot animals.
So people paid up to £70,000 to shoot civilians for sport during the Bosnian War in the 1990s. So we're also not talking about, you know, people in pith helmets hunting the fauna of Africa in the early 1900s and taking back trophy elephant stuffings to their castles in England. Mm. We're talking about people. There's already a war going on there in the 1990s. I don't know if you remember, there was a place called Yugoslavia once.
Mm-hmm. I dated a Yugoslavian.
When it was still a country.
His name was Radomir Nedeljkovic.
Okay, so was he Croat? Was he Serbian? Was he Bosnian? Was he Montenegrin? Was he Albanian?
I don't know, but he didn't kiss very well.
Oh. Slobodan
Milošević.
Do you know who Slobodan Milošević is? James? I'm sure most of the people in the audience will be horrified that you don't know that, because of course they do. We've got very smart people who listen to us. Slobodan Milošević. No, I don't know him.
Slobodan Milošević.
Slobodan Milošević was the leader of Yugoslavia. Well, Serbia at that point when they broke up, because he started and was largely responsible for the Balkan War in the 1990s. I know, James, you were not born at that point, so why would you care? But there was a funny moment, which I'm sure we can find it on the internet if we just look hard enough, but where Slobodan Milošević is at the Hague, the Human Rights Court, and somebody says to him, one of the prosecutors, like, Mr. Milošević, how do you explain the deaths of these 1,000 people or whatever? He goes, that is your problem. It's not my problem.
Yes.
Remember him?
Yeah.
Anyway, lovely, lovely, charming chap. Really terrific human being. He often springs to mind when I think of like some of the worst people who've been alive at the same time as us. Mm. Yeah, there's Robert Mugabe. There's Slobodan Milošević. There are a couple of those tin pot dictators in the Southeast Asian area. Sukarno and Suharto and all of those guys. There was that lovely, charming woman, Imelda Marcos. Remember her? Mm-hmm. So, again, when people say, oh, yeah, Trump is Hitler, I'm like, no, but I've lived just long enough to already know some pretty evil people's names, yeah. And I wouldn't put him among them. And your scale is a little out. Let's just take a look again to go to your question at history, and you can compare apples with apples. I'd rather have a Donald Trump any day of the week than a Slobodan Milošević. Mm-hmm. But you, of course, call him something different.
Yes, Slobodan Milošević.
Which is also such a charming way that Serbians ask a girl out on a date.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, because that's what they do.
So, yes, shooting people for money, snipers.
So, yeah, this is during that Balkan War.
But now... surely that wasn't a fad, and is it still going on?
No.
You know when you have these random sniper things? Could that be?
I think in some fever dream of people who believe that rich people are the enemy, they imagine a universe where rich people can go around and shoot people for sport. First of all, what kind of people would have been able to make money, because you need to have relationships with other people in order to make money? You know, business is all about making deals with people, and it's about sitting in rooms and having meetings. And if you're a malignant, anti-human psychopath who wants to hunt people for sport, who in their right mind would sit in a meeting with you? And if you think people can act that well, if you hate people enough to be able to shoot them for sport, I would say you probably can't hide it.
Mm.
A very rare and particularly disturbed creature of the brand of a serial killer, which, I mean, you watch all those shows. You'd probably pick up
on...
No, the shows with the murderers, the serial killers. You love those murder shows.
Yes, true crime.
You'd be able to pick up on it, right? Or is that why you watch the shows? Because you're testing whether you could pick up on it.
Perhaps.
Maybe I'm starting to understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this journalist called Ezio Gavazzeni alleges that Serbian militia facilitated the human safaris taking foreign tourists to target men, women, and children. The alleged participants are now facing murder charges and are accused of exploiting the war for personal thrill with no agenda or political or religious motive.
You also asked the question, how did it only come up now? Like, what happened? Did somebody... could someone not go to their grave without telling the truth about something? Anyway.
I think it's also, look, it's a sensational story. Chances are, and you read more news than probably I do, you didn't know about this until I told you this morning. And I think it's a sensational story.
Yeah.
I mean, I have wanted to do safaris with humans, but not with a gun. Like, not to kill humans. But remember when I suggested that we drive through that poor white neighborhood in... No, don't laugh yet. You don't know the story. You don't hire one of those Land Rovers with the seats that go up.
Yes.
The game vehicles.
Yeah, yeah.
And James and Flix and Leanne and maybe Ben if he wants to come. And a couple of other people. Maybe we give away three places to some listeners. And we get binoculars and we dress in khakis and we all get on there and we have a – I'll be the tour guide. I'll drive. And then we drive through like a shitty neighborhood in Krugersdorp, for example. And we all point at the
Past
children.
That hospital.
No, we'll point at the children who are tied to the gate, you know, while their parents are doing meth.
There are scene cages in wouldn't gardens wanna, where they put children in.
Yeah, well, wouldn't you want to, like, because how often in your life are you going to have a chance to slowly drive through the street? I mean, we're going to have to go fast eventually because then the neighborhood's going to find out that we're there
still...
with binoculars looking at their weird families and, you know. They're eventually going to get upset. But I did think it would be a fun thing to do. And of course, only on the show and only in my dreams, because I would never actually be able to do that.
Yeah.
At some point, my
Best
tiny amount...
is what I'm thinking about.
Well, you can't just drive through there and spectate, but it would be fun, right? I mean, you know how much I love a freak show.
Yes, you do. That's particularly why you liked Chimp Eden.
I did like Chimp Eden.
Good old Jane Goodall, who passed away this year.
Oh, I did like Chimp Eden.
Yes.
Those were a good place.
Because those chimps had serious histories, where some of them had smoking addictions and were alcoholics.
Well, wasn't that the one we sponsored? Because I sent the money. Remember, there was the one that was
You liked the maddest one. The where you had to stand behind a fence.
That's right.
Because he flung poo at you.
Yes, and I immediately fell in love. And I said... We got to sponsor this chimp for like a year.
He flung rocks.
Yes.
But also...
He's a very disturbed animal.
He also wanked off in front of us.
Yeah, he behaved pretty much like a primate ordinarily would.
Yeah.
And what he reminded me of is just how close the rest of the human race is to our cousins and brothers that still swing from the trees. And I suddenly thought, you know what? You got to pay for this guy. And that was where I parted with some...
Take me to the maddest one.
Hey, sorry. There's speaking of chimpanzees.
There
here's Ben.
Flinging his poo.
But you James, weren't with us when we went to Chimp Eden, were you?
James, I tell
James
you what,
that microphone is not going to work.
The attempts that you made gingerly on here...
Oh, that's a disaster. This is really where we
I
can't...
I haven't been to Chimp Eden. I didn't go with you either.
Charming place. It's out in Nelspruit. Mm.
All right.
Yeah, it's not a bar in Nelspruit where you meet other South Africans.
That was my initial thoughts.
It is an actual chimp sanctuary. But shame, they rescue them. The stories there are very sad.
Yes,
they rescue
them
from...
Yes, some of them have been kept as pets. One of them was a bouncer at a club. Sorry.
Yeah, one was a bouncer at the original Chimp Eden.
The one was a bouncer, and he would sit outside with a cigar.
With a cigar. That was the one that I helped. That was the mad one.
Shame, man.
And he'd lost a bit of hair, so he was a bit bald as well. And
yeah, some of them they have to isolate because they're a bit mad because they've had these histories. Mm-hmm. But no, a lot of orphans and things like that. But yeah.
So
I mean,
do remember
that chimps are the ones that'll peel the skin off your face.
Oh, yeah. No, they're supremely dangerous and extremely strong.
Yeah.
Very, very strong things. All right. So I know you're a big fan of the Amish.
Yes.
I wish
I was Amish.
This is something people don't know. After all these years, Leanne has found... Oh, there's James just blocking my camera. Isn't that great, Flex? Such a professional. So, Leanne, one of the things you don't know about her that I do is that she has a deep and an abiding passion for the Amish people. They are her favorite people. She's fascinated by them. There's James again. She is...
It's not far from the truth. I would really like a simple life.
I think you would love to live there. That would be your favorite place if you could live in like Pennsylvania.
I just battle to get it up for a man who has a beard and no mustache.
Oh, you mean you'd be to get excited?
Mm. The beard and no mustache thing's a no-no.
It's very manly to have a beard. And these guys work. They build barns. Did you ever watch the movie Witness? Did you ever watch The Village.
I don't know about that
one. Was it The Village? What was the movie with there's the Amish people and they lived in the secluded commune and then there were the creatures that came in and they all had to hide. M. Night Shyamalan. No,
Heels
man. M. Night Shyamalan. That guy.
Yes.
Who did, what was it called? The Village?
Could have been.
I think it was.
Have you heard of the Hutterites?
The Hutterites?
Yes.
Don't talk dirty to
another, me. Another farming community.
Yes. Tell me about them.
So
they have moustaches.
I haven't.
Are they more up your alley, Leanne?
Looked them up on YouPorn just quite yet. But there's been a study, and people have wondered for years why the Amish are so allergy resistant.
Mm.
And it turns out it's from
no moustaches
being exposed.
Ben, you're a one-trick pony this morning. Yeah.
To barns, pregnant women.
Barns.
Being exposed to barns. So, for instance, they compared them to the Hutterites because they were like, okay, these farming communities are strange. These kids don't have allergies that the rest of the world has. And we know that allergies are getting worse and worse as yes. time goes by. It's not all in the mind. It's legitimate. People are developing allergies.
Right.
And so they took two farming communities because they had nothing to compare the Amish to
mm-hmm.
and thought of the Hutterites. And the Hutterites do have allergies. And it turns out it's because the Hutterites ban any pregnant woman or any child under the age of 12 from working in the barns where they are.
So you have to compare apples with apples.
And yes.
Hutterites are about as close as you're going to get to the Amish. So what's the difference? Why do the Amish have very few allergies and these guys don't? Turns out it has to do with the exposure you have to barns.
Yes. So the Hutterite kids and pregnant moms don't go into the animal barns. Kids aren't actually exposed to the animal barns until they're about 12 or so.
And then they start sneezing up a storm. Yeah, it's a disaster. But isn't this true?
The Amish kids are in and out of the barns all day, so they develop this resistance.
Right. Isn't it true, though, that this is also a good reason for parents to have pets with their children?
Yes, let them dig in the sand.
Very good idea.
Take them to petting zoos and don't wash their hands.
This is it. Kids who are raised in cities, in these completely aseptic places where every counter is wiped 17 times and you've got something going psst in the corner of the room, clearing the air. You've got people wearing gloves when they do the dishes. You've got people who never expose themselves to animal hair or to the occasional dog shit in the garden.
Explains why we get sick every time we travel.
Correct. These are weak people if you compare them to the Amish who from an early age are exposed to all of this stuff and then guess what? They get stronger. I mean, I can talk to Dr. Hanan about this when he comes on just now, but essentially we know this in our deepest core because if you are afraid of something, the only way to get over that is to face it, right? If you want to get
exposure
therapy. If you are weak, how do you get strong? Resistance.
Mm.
You train. You grow your muscles by tearing them, effectively.
You grow resistance through straw, hay, and cow farts.
Ta-da! People know this shit. So that this does not strike me as particularly breakthrough news, but then for some people it might be, which is one of the reasons that when you try to isolate people and keep them safe, it has the opposite effect.
COVID.
Correct. It makes them weaker.
Yeah.
Right. So, again, I love that they had to go $1 million research went into
decades.
This, right? Yeah, instead of just going,
And all the researchers were in the barn sneezing and coughing and wiping
again,
their eyes.
I have to, all you might have wanted to do was ask one of the greatest philosophers of all time. And you know who I'm talking about. The famous quote is, that don't kill me can only make me stronger.
Yes.
Right?
The.
You laugh? That is the greatest philosophical contribution
still
of the last 50 years. I mean, of course we used to.
So
it goes, that don't
exactly
kill me
how it starts.
Can only make me stronger. You know who we're talking about, right? Yeah, there we go.
So, that was Kanye's prime years, though.
Kanye was, I mean, Genius. How are you, Ben?
Yeah, pretty good. Still
What's
strong,
happening?
Actually. Yeah, fine.
Yeah, a bit of exposure therapy. What have you been exposing yourself to?
I've exposed myself to everything, basically. Been out in the dirt.
Really?
Rolling in barns.
Really?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, so you're as happy and healthy as can be.
Super amazing.
A bit of hay in the back of your head.
It's fine.
Were you totally sitting fine. On the hay bales going...
Yeah, lifting yeah? things, being yeah. in the sun. You know, just trying to stay young.
Being in the sun's a big one.
Pop out in Joburg.
We sound like such breakthrough revolutionary people this morning. Sun, exposure therapy, going into barns. People must think that they've just stumbled upon
people
from
the
1600s.
They always look for magic. We've gone through this.
Yeah, they do want magic. They do. Have you seen an improvement in your neighborhood thanks to the G20, Ben? Are the machoshas out in greater numbers?
Let's go out at night, eh? I can't tell you. Maybe tonight I'll give you an update on the machoshas because this weekend's the dry run, right?
Yes, of course.
Machoshas.
Prostitutes.
Oh. I know what morutis are.
What?
Moruti.
Moruti's a priest.
Yes. And I told you, found out that my mom's carer is having an affair with
a morut.
Yes. And so now we sing every night when she's not there, when it's her week off. Moruti, my friend, show me your penis.
That person slaves over your mother, has to look after her and take care of all of her personal needs. And as soon as she leaves the room, you guys start singing about her affair with the priest. What nice people.
You've got to laugh at something, right?
No, I know. I'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah, but you were incorporating her 1 week.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me get her on the show, maybe. All right. Apparently, also, there are still remote employees. So we mentioned just a moment ago, exposure therapy is one of the reasons that it's better to work in an office than to work on your own at home. And look, there's a place for remote work, and we all know that it has its value. But again, just because we learned that it could be done doesn't mean it's the best way to do things. It boggles my mind that there are still places that allow people to work from home 5 days a week. Crazy.
But it still happens. So, for instance, the agency I was at previously – we based in Cape Town, but all remote employees working for UK companies.
Right.
Because the UK, you know, likes our cheap labor.
You've just done the thing. You know what the thing is?
What?
It's like when I say this is a crazy idea, then you tell me about your life and how it isn't crazy. You know that thing?
Oh, that thing.
Yeah, that thing. So anyway, it's good. It's good that you do that. Because I need to be reminded. Sometimes I'm wrong, and sometimes you're predictable. I mean, we need to predict these things, figure these things out. Pattern-seeking mammals. The reason I say it's crazy is because I think an important part of working with people is actually seeing them. Like the
100% things work much better.
And you know, there are these people who will not. Switch on their cameras at all. I don't think it's necessary all the time.
But
guys never switch on cameras when I meet with you.
No, because please, Ben, who wants to see me?
I do. I want to connect with you guys. I want to feel something.
I get to see you here at the office.
On Friday.
Yeah.
That's only Fridays, though.
Anyway, apparently there are remote workers who are being fired from the jobs that they didn't even work at.
Yes. So it's actually happened.
How does this stuff... Because I understand companies who, you know, you sometimes hear about like employees who've been dead for 10 years, but someone's still collecting their checks.
There was that one guy who died at his desk and no one knew for about a week. They just greeted him every day.
Wow. He must have been such a live wire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
This actually happened. A 23-year-old applied for a remote position last year. And then once he was starting the onboarding process, and I remember this from this agency I was at, it was completely disorganized. He said everything was through email. They somehow forgot to assign me to a team. I waited around. There was no response. So I figured that I'd chill until somebody noticed. And I think it was after a year, they contacted him to tell him duties underperformance.
That's brilliant.
That they were firing him. So all these months went by.
Your performance has not met expectations.
He was getting paid every 2 weeks.
Your KPIs have not been met. You imagine that email. That guy must have laughed his ass off.
He was getting paid every 2 weeks. No tasks, no meetings, no contacts.
Isn't that like the dream Gen Z job, though?
Oh, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
I mean,
he said
I know.
He traveled. He started. He took up gaming. He was living up his best life.
Because he had all this time.
He says, then last week, HR sent me an email saying that they're letting me go. Your performance has not met expectations. He says, he literally logged into the company system once. They sent him a severance check. They didn't even bother replying. They paid nearly $20,000 for him to do nothing. Wow. He said, I kind of feel guilty, but I also feel like I beat the system.
Yeah, I mean, that is the dream Gen Z job.
In fact,
I know Gen Z. I know Gen Z people who when you say to them, "Do you want this job?" They're like, oh, if I have to. They've come for the interview, given you their CV, told you how great they are, put on a whole show. Maybe they've even got a show reel, and they're like, "I really need the job." And then when you interview them, they're like, "Cool, have I got the job?" And you say yes, and then they go, "Oh, now I have to work."
No, I know. Don't even take me there.
Right?
Don't even.
I'm like, yeah, you got to work. Why? Oh, do I get benefits? And I'm like, what did you have in mind? Well, I was hoping you could pay for my petrol, my medical aid, my paternity leave. But you don't have kids. Doesn't matter. I might. What else do they want? They want their holidays. They want extra time off. They want to be able to go and do things during the day, like get their hair cut, and that must count as office hours. I'm like, companies really have been spoiling people if that's what they expect.
There are two things. The one thing is, while I was at this company remotely, they used to force us to have these, what were they called, pod meetings.
Oh, yeah.
Where you were all divided up into pods, and then you'd catch up once a week about, tell us the best thing that happened to you this week.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, so the one day I mentioned that I'd had a hip replacement.
That must have gone down like a lead balloon.
And in the chat on the public forum, while I was talking about the story and other people went on, they said, we did not see you apply for leave.
Oh.
For your hip replacement, meaning. So I said aloud, oh, I've just seen a message in the chat saying that I didn't apply for leave. Actually, I didn't. I was in hospital for one night and I started working the next day. I worked through my hip replacement recovery. Thank you very much.
And let me guess.
And then there were applause. You know,
You're a hero. You just won the Second World War.
And then Okay.
Did any of them ask you about it before you said that, though?
No,
because
you only have a pod meeting once a week.
Wow, Leanne, so many questions. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah,
but this is a Gen X versus Gen Z thing, and yes. I don't like doing this comparison because again, it's not apples and apples. But
no,
you
but look a Gen X if they'd had a hip replacement would have made a thing about
God,
it.
God, are you kidding?
I mean, a Gen Z.
They would have started a GoFundMe. There would have been an interview, a 20-minute prequel. There would have been TikTok reels of every step of the process. They're the first person to ever have one of these. There would have been 10 emails to HR about how they need, why didn't people send me flowers at the hospital, even though I was only there for the day? What other things can I get from the office? Why isn't everybody
this gives
doing
me an
prayers.
Excuse to burst into tears every 2 minutes.
Yeah. My mental health. Can't I get free counseling because this operation has really affected my view of myself? You were off for a day and then back at work.
Yes.
You didn't tell anyone you were doing this because you're not farming for sympathy. And none of these people asked because they don't care about you.
No.
Right? And then...
And we didn't see you applying for leave.
Yeah. So they try to catch you on that one.
Yeah.
And then they also afterwards go, oh, well, Dan, you're such a superhero. You won the Second World War. But they didn't care 5 seconds before because no one's asked you about your life until that moment.
Yeah.
You see, this is the difference.
Maybe I missed some context here. But it's because of remote working you were able to do that, right?
Correct.
You weren't like clambering up the stairs to the office the next day like an old crone.
I was at home.
Cheapest yet, get in shape.
I was at home in bed with my laptop. The only times I wasn't working was when I was like knocked out from paying bills.
Right.
But because...
Which must have been the entire next day, Leanne. What are you?
No, but if I... This is not an eight-hour thing. So you could choose how many clients you had and how hard you worked.
Yeah, I know, but a hip replacement is like...
It's a big thing.
Well, I've had two of them and...
She's going for a third soon.
I'm going for my third. Remember, I do have a third leg.
Where's your third hip?
I did have a third leg.
She's making a habit of this.
I did. It was called... What was it called?
Well, I just want to point out that before we get onto your third leg, usually only men boast about their third leg, Leanne, but okay. I just want to point out that on this show we took a totally different approach to you going in for your operations. All we did was chastise you for how old you are that you needed it in the first place.
Yeah, you did. But I still said to you, I've got a big surprise for you. I'm having a hip replacement and you guffawed for half an hour.
Yes, but that's what friends are for.
Yes.
See, the people who applauded you in that meeting and pretended to be caring, good, kind, compassionate people who think about anything but themselves for more than 5 seconds, those are not cool people. Those are not nice people. Always rather trust your friends who laugh at your misfortune.
Yes.
Like we do.
The ones who are honest.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of misfortune, let's see what the Dr. Hanan, is he ready? Okay. By misfortune, I wanted to check what's happening in the comments section. Have I? Okay, thanks. Very good, James. Let's see. Why equate laziness with Gen Z? It's a human thing to be lazy for thousands of years and nothing to do with Gen X or other crap term. So, Arthur, you're just wrong. I don't want to go into a whole discussion. You're just wrong.
From this Gen X, meh.
Yeah. You just do it for to camera. Show Leanne. Do it for Arthur.
It's just a big meh.
Right, there we go. I missed no days in 28 years, says Chris Smith, with my previous company, except the day I had an epileptic fit and was taken away unconscious. Are you laughing at his fit?
No, I just imagined him in an ambulance on his laptop.
Yeah, that would be, I'm sorry, Arthur. Chris is right. This is a generational thing. I mean, can you imagine... Let's take it back another generation or even two. Imagine someone who was at work in the 50s in a steel manufacturing plant saying...
Like asbestos manufacturing.
I need to have like 2 days off for my mental health. Imagine,
can you imagine
what the foreman would say. I mean, he beat you to pulp with some steel siding for a railway. I mean, Dr. Hanan, things have changed, and believe me, I don't want to live in the 50s where you get beaten with steel when you talk about your mental health.
You're forced to make lead-based paint.
But I also think we've gone a little too far, and I suspect you might actually agree with me on this, because now, you know, people need like 3 weeks off for their mental health when their cat dies, and the company must pay for it. It's kind of gone a little bit, the pendulum has swung too far this way, or am I wrong?
I completely agree, and I heard you say you were talking earlier about you have to confront things in order to get stronger. You need resistance training in order to build
you agree with that?
Muscles. You need to completely.
Okay.
What
I was not looking forward to this morning is the first thing having you correct me and argue with me because it's bad for my mental health, Dr. Hanan.
Can you repeat the 15 anchors? Go.
Not a chance. I know there's sleep. There's
partnership or
family,
sex.
Friends, fucking
exposure to straw,
exposing yourself to straw
and cow farts.
Something like that. Have we got at least half?
Yeah, you got about 3 out of the 15.
All right. Okay, so listen, last week I asked you to do some homework, which you usually ask us to do, and I'm very diligent about doing the homework that you make us do. I listen very carefully. I sometimes re-listen to what Dr. Hanan says on the show. But I asked you last week, and I know Ben is also fascinated by this. Charlie Sheen put out this documentary. He's written a book as well. It turns out that despite having the wildest life in the whole world, this guy is actually quite sensible. I mean, now he is. And he's able to look back because he's some kind of superhuman. He's got something going on, whether it's tiger's blood, I'm not sure. But this guy, he tried his best to do all the wrong things. And it just seems like through good fortune, maybe the good genes of Martin, his father and his mom, maybe out of having a safety net because he was famous or because he was rich. But this guy really is back at it. I don't doubt that there will be a moment in the not too distant future where Charlie Sheen will get a really impressive role. He'll win an Oscar. People love a redemption story too. But there's a lot to discuss with this man. And I don't know whether I'm unusually fascinated with him or whether it's anybody who encounters this story who would be fascinated. But what are your top line thoughts on this guy?
So we can definitely link it to what you were talking about earlier, which is how do we get stronger? And that is through resistance, through pushing through. And I'll tell you why I say that. One of the great experiments that I do in my practice is I take my patient and I share the following. I go and boil a hot cup of water, and I make them hold that hot cup of water, and it's very, very hot. And the rule is you got to hold on to it and you can't put it down. And every patient looks at me and goes, but I'm going to get burnt. And I say, well, let's try it. So I give them the hot cup of water, and if you can imagine, they hold on to it. And within 2 seconds, it gets a little bit too hot. And they look at me almost asking for permission. Can they put it down? And the answer is no. And what ends up happening is with every single patient, they hold on to the cup. And every single person starts playing piano. They start moving their fingers around. And they start moving it around and moving it around and moving it around. And they start finding a spot where they feel comfortable. And that is when I say stop. And then I ask them, what happened? And everybody realizes that they've adapted. And I want people to swap hot water with emotion. What happens most times is that most people feel that negative emotion and they run away from it. And when they run away from it, yes, it feels better. But what we don't learn is how to adapt. We can only get to it by going through it. And what happened 50 years ago, you're talking about the pendulum sweeping the other way. Is 50 years ago, little Kurbus comes up to Dad and says, Dad, I'm feeling anxious. And Dad goes, why are you telling me this? Go back to the barn, go back to the yard, go back to the farm, go back this. Just keep on living life. Right. These days, little Cliffy comes up to Mom, I'm feeling anxious. OT, play therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, school counselor. Everybody is helping their child by taking their child's cup away from them and making the child feel better. But what it doesn't teach a child is how to adapt. So when the child is confronted by life, sadness, hurt, frustration, rejection, grief, the child does not know, now that it's an adult, does not know how to deal with it. So going back to Charlie Sheen, the trick is not in terms of what he's been through, but rather in the moving forward. Where we re-pattern and re-understand what has happened only when we move forward and look at it in the rearview mirror. You can't understand the current suffering in the current state. You can only repattern it and understand it once you move beyond it and look at it through the rearview mirror. Trauma can be repatterned only when you move past it and look back at it and understand it differently. So the trick is to move forward as opposed to holding on and getting internal.
I love that in so many ways. I want to hear Leanne and Ben's thoughts on this too, because I know you guys have also, I think you said you'd watched the Charlie Sheen thing. Have you?
No, I haven't. I thought you were going to ask if I'd been through any trauma, and I was going to say, this is me.
No, we don't need to go down that avenue. No. And I do think you move on. I mean, sometimes it takes a while, sometimes it's easy. But the things that you get over, I'm sometimes like, shit, she got over that quickly. And then the things that you haven't got over, I'm like, she's still haggling on this one for. I love what you were saying, though, because also we've been misled to believe that life has to be eternally happy. And we've discussed this on the show before, and I know you and I have discussed it too, Dr. Hanan. But it seems that some people believe erroneously that life is there to just give them a happy time. It's like a big roller coaster ride, and it's full of highs and no lows. which is ludicrous because the whole human experience includes misery. And it is sometimes appropriate for you to be miserable. Who would think highly of a person who, if they lost someone very dear to them, was not a little depressed? Who would think of that person and be charmed by them? It is almost essential that we respond to the environment ad hoc as things occur. And most importantly, what you said is that we deal with things, hard things sometimes, because that does make us stronger, and emerge victorious on the other side, ready to tell a story of conquest, victory, exactly. Overcoming. That makes a life worth paying attention to, right?
100%. You know, when I work with patients who have been through grief, let's just say a patient has lost a pet that saw the pet as a member of their family. And I ask them, if I told you that you weren't going to have this pet in your life and weren't going to love this pet, but at the same time, there's no grief, would you take that deal? Would you take the deal where there's no love and no grief, or love and grief? And over the last 22 years, I've never had anybody say to me, I'd rather not have had this love and not this grief. In other words, every person says, I'll take this experience with this person or the pet that I love 100 times over and go through the grief just because of the experiences that I've had with this animal, with this member of the family. When it comes to love, it comes with grief, and that's the other side of the coin. You can't have happiness if you're not going to have grief. You can't have love if you can't have grief. The opposite only exists because the contrast exists as well. So you've got to have both. You've got to take both.
That you can't have brandy without a hangover.
Yeah.
I mean, this is life.
I thought you were going to say without a Coke, but anyway. Well,
that too, Leanne, if that's what floats your boat, but that is life.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also, I mean, it's so twee, but I think of that song from the brilliant El Bundy show with Peg and the kids, Married with Children. Yeah. And, you know, it starts with that song, Love and Marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. You can't have one without the other. The only person I've ever met or spoken to who would take the opposite view every time is a guy called David Benatar. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's an academic. He's an antinatalist. He reckons it would have been better to have never existed.
But
he says any amount of suffering is too much suffering.
But also, through the decision of not wanting to get your child a kitten because you know that the cat's going to die one day and the child will be sad.
Yeah.
Or to not have children.
Yeah.
Because either you don't want to fall in love with them, or to not go into a relationship because you know every relationship ends in a sad way.
Right.
Whether it's death or whatever it is.
But in some way, I don't want to make decisions for other people. If you make any of those decisions Leanne just spoke about, no, cool, good for you. I do think that you're missing out on the full experience.
Totally.
Mm.
If you decide, there are very good arguments, and I've heard from people who are way smarter than me. They have justified to me that they will not do certain things because they expect ultimately for the result to hurt them. And I just think that that's kind of cowardly. Like, you could choose the experience. It's like those people who go to the top of a bridge and they will get ready for the bungee jump and they'll be tied in and their friends will all be going 3, 2, 1. And then just before they're about to jump, they're like, nah, I can't, don't want to do it.
I have done that on a bridge swing.
I know. And I just always feel to have not left for the bridge and have paid the money would have been better than to get there and then at the last minute decide, nah, I'm not going to do it. Right?
Yeah, it's 100%. Gareth, it's 100%. And it's a metaphor for life. If you're here, this is you. You're on the edge of the platform and you might as well jump. If you are breathing air, there's air in your lungs, you jump. You dance like nobody's watching. You hold, you kiss. You step out of comfort zone. You go on adventures. What a waste of being alive, which is, by the way, you know, you don't have any other option. It is what it is. You're here. You might as well make it count. So do the things that inspire you. Do the things that create this great vision for you. Live a life of meaning and purpose, because at the end of the day, you're going to look back and you're going to say one of two things. I'm glad I did, or damn, I should have. And live your life now so you can look back and say, I'm glad I did.
I don't disagree with any of that. Yeah. I think that life is the prize. People always going, what is the meaning of life?
Absolutely.
What is my purpose? What comes after life? And I feel like saying, your prize is right now. You get to have urgency. You get to be mortal. Your decisions matter. You have free choice every day. You can wake up and make the world a better place or make it shittier. You can jump, do that bungee jump, or you can decide to just be boring. You can have the kids. You don't have to have the kids. You can have the pet. You don't have to have the pet. You can choose the husband or wife. You don't have to. That's exciting. My goodness. What isn't the whole point of being rich, for example, that you have options? Well, guess what? Being alive rewards you with options. And there are people who are in wheelchairs. There are people who have had debilitating illnesses. And they're choosing to experience the world. So if you put yourself in cotton wool and you choose not to, that's on you. What a waste of an amazing opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know what, Gareth, I've seen people in wheelchairs that have more options than people that are able to walk freely. It's a mindset. You have options, right, and you better just make use of it.
Right. Love it. Well, Dr. Hanan, you've left us on a high this morning. Have an awesome weekend.
You too, guys. See you.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, listen, you just decide to live. Wake up in the morning and go, fuck yeah.
Yeah. That's the prize. That is the prize.
It is
really
the prize. I think if you consider if it's possible for you to put your mind, and I see so many people on social media who are just in their own head all the time, right? The world is only accessible to them subjectively, so they cannot do this. But just for a minute, do an experiment with yourself. Attempt to put yourself in the position of, without being sacrilegious or upsetting anybody, imagine if you were a god, right? You have forever to live and nothing can kill you. And that eternity of time, have you ever been on a holiday for 1 or 2 days too many?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, were you like, okay, I've had fun now, I've done nothing, I've been in the sun, or I've seen a whole bunch of things, eaten myself to a standstill, I need to get back and do something productive. You ever been on a holiday that's too long?
Yeah.
Okay. So imagine you're a god and you can live forever and you have the eternity of existence with no beginning and no end to contemplate. You already know everything because you're a god. You can create things. You can destroy things. You wield unbelievable power. Maybe you have omnipotence, omnipresence,
and omniscience.
Do you carry
responsibility?
Well, it doesn't matter because you can change these things. The whole universe is plastic and you can play with it. Maybe it's a small universe. Maybe you have the responsibility of a big universe. Maybe you can just close the box and put it away. Maybe you create an ant farm and you forget about it. Who knows? It's impossible to imagine that. But for a moment, imagine what it is like to be a god and then think, what would be a reward for the spirit of a god so that it could feel urgency, passion, love, misery, sadness, ecstasy, joy, family, friendship? Those are the things that a god would want. And the experience of a human, while we are not in the business of comparing ourselves to gods unless we want trouble, the experience of a human is, I think, a reward for whatever celestial, endless spirit exists inside of you. And therefore, I am fucking delighted that I'll have, if I'm lucky, 100 years here to let it go and to experience it all. It would just be so boring if you decided to do the same thing every day.
You're basically occupying time, if that's it. It's like just
biding the time.
You're just batting out. You're batting out the day.
Yeah, I know people who live that way, and it's just not the way I want to live. Yeah. All right, so let's see what the people in the comments section say. There is a lot going on here. Because of decisions we have to make, we will always be able to choose whether we see life as I should have rather or I did experience life. Yeah, they've interviewed thousands of old people, and they ask them, what do you regret the most? Not one of them says, I didn't work hard enough. Even the ones who like spent every day working and derived great joy out of it, none of them went, I worked hard enough. I never worked hard enough. They all talk about other people.
Or the fact that they should have not worked so hard.
And that they should have spent time with their family and their friends and, you know, done the things they love.
Yet we are so wrapped up in work.
Yeah. Gareth says, Bitcoin Book, did you see that Brian Johnson guy took 5 grams of shrooms and it changed his perspective on life? He still wants to live longer, though. Yeah, this Brian Johnson guy is fascinating to me, but not in a way that I would want to meet him. Or he's doing that edge research that none of us want to do. Yeah. He's the guy who wants to live forever. He's done like got his kid and did a blood transfusion. Poor fucking child had to take this guy's blood.
He's the pale guy with the dark hair, right?
He's super pale. Yeah. He's, I think, 48 currently.
Yeah.
Wow, he looks – I'm sorry, but he looks older.
No, he's got a youthfulness to him, but it's that pale skin because obviously the sun makes you old and haggard and stuff.
But the sun is also just extremely important. You have to get a little bit of it.
Yeah, but he'll get it in like the prescribed dose. He won't get it in a recreational sense, but he looks – like you can see that there's vitality in youth, but he also looks weird.
Yeah, he has a bit of zest, but he looks strange.
I love this. Don't run away from life. This is Monica on the comments. Face it, there is no pleasure without pain. Life is live a full life with all expectations, good and bad, all experiences. I can't seem to read this morning. My reading has gone to shit. All right, let's get into some other stuff because philosophy is not what we're here for in the mornings. Certainly not why our audience woke up today to join us. So, a couple of things. We've got to get into some sport in a moment or two. But Ben asked us the other day what you are excited about at this time of year, and we kind of got stuck on Christmas music in malls. But are there other things that you love and hate about this time of year? I mentioned at the start of the show, I just love the weather, especially in Gauteng over Christmas is just the fucking best.
Okay, I know we don't like talking about the weather, but we really haven't had much of a summer.
Not yet. It's coming.
I think they've been – yesterday Buenas. Was quite hot and there was another day that was quite hot. But usually by now, we're the 14th of November, we've had a few swelters.
You need some – what is – we know swass is a sweaty ass.
Yes.
What is – my sweats?
Your sweats?
What do you call the sweaty tits?
But you don't sweat up here. You sweat underneath.
Leanne, I would leave my house if I had tits.
But yeah, it's that heat where you get home, you take off everything, and you've got to hold everything up while the fan's down there.
This would make a great reality show. I mean, it would be horrible, but it would be great at the same time.
What, watching me take off my clothing and the secret life
of Leanne Moll. I can see a camera angle from below with the fan and you're going,
splayed.
With your tits up over your shoulders. All right. What are the things that you like? I mean, I know you love this time of year.
Yeah, when you walk into shops and shops are different and there's like a certain excitement around certain things and like mince pies.
You like mince
just
pies?
Just straight up mince pies. That's because you don't walk into a store in August and it's like mince pies. It's just not there. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Those kind of things are so fun.
They're little things too. Like there's a Christmas smell. I don't know if maybe I've been conditioned to this or whatever, but – you know, we used to have a real Christmas tree when I was growing up. Now, please, who wants to deal with that? First of all, you have to cut down some tree or you have to plant it.
They still sell them.
I know.
Near I know. To me.
But there's a smell. There's a smell of that kind of indoor pine tree or whatever kind of conifer it is that you put inside that always lingers with me for Christmas.
But there's the cooking on the day. There's,
oh, hell yeah. That's
when
lovely.
Else do you make gammon?
Yeah.
When else do you cook turkey? We're not Americans where we have turkey on our sandwiches every day. So it's those
special.
Specific things.
Yeah, so it's the food. Yeah. It's the whole lot.
Yeah.
People like talking about holidays too is really cool.
Yeah.
Because everyone tries to make an effort for end of year. And you get to listen to people like share where they like to go, what they like to do. And it's like a fun, positive conversation. It's not like, oh, fuck, I've got to go to this wedding and, oh, I've got some stupid kids' party. That kind of stuff is just the rest of the year. December is the one time people actually get to choose where they go and what they do.
Yeah, I love it. It's absolutely my favorite thing. My favorite thing. I love buying other people presents, especially like hilarious stuff. Because yeah, Christmas is no like cap on how much you're allowed to buy for other people. Obviously,
well, you get the family. I
overspend.
The secret
we don't have. So my sister-in-law tried to do that once when she just married my brother, and she was like, "Oh, let's all put a name in a hat, and we all have to secret Santa each other." I was like, "No, I want to buy everyone presents."
Oh, if you're in the position to do that,
it's not financially. I mean, they might be cheap, but
see, for me, it's a bit different because everyone's died, so I only have a few gifts to buy, like three.
And you 12. Still want to go like just on the basis of the secret Santa?
No, we don't do that anymore because
okay, yeah,
there
I mean,
are
there's
only
so
three.
Few. For fuck's sake, how miserly are you?
Before, if we count her, but
her, what, the one who lives under the stairs in the Harry Potter cupboard?
No,
if we
literally
count her, Leanne goes, oh my god, what's that? What's the poll? Let's take a look. James has put a poll up. What are you most excited about for this time of year? Good December, summer finally, Baker Choice biscuits. Really, is that a thing?
It is. Totally.
The big box.
And mall music with Mariah Carey vibes. Well, I would say my favorite thing is the music. I'm not yet allowing myself to listen to Christmas music, but as soon as the 1st of December comes, it's on. Because I'll be sick of it by Christmas, but I love it. I never listen to it any other time of the year. Have you noticed?
It's the mince pies of audio.
Yeah, it is.
Like, what would a mince pie taste different in April?
Yeah, it'd be almost like weird. It'd be sacrilege, really.
Cheating.
It's like hot crust buns the rest of the year as well. I know people do that, but come on, grow up.
You're not allowed to.
You're not allowed to. It's silly. It's autumn. It's
Easter.
It's
not allowed. It's forbidden.
Come here with your festive buns.
It is forbidden. You may not do this. All right, so James, I'm going to vote for definitely not Baker's Choice biscuits. I understand. Fine, you've all educated me. That's a thing.
But the thing is that shrinkflation, for instance, the one with the jam in the middle, those used to be much bigger, and the jam part used to be bigger.
Are they cheating you, Leanne?
No, it's like
they
a
really
suggestion
are.
Of jam.
Are they
a whiff of jam.
They're cheating you.
A spot of red.
Oh.
I've noticed, though, that everything, all the packets of anything, they just quietly have reduced the amount inside them. I bought a packet of chips the other day.
Yes.
The packets this fucking big.
Are a big thing.
And the chips,
but
it's
weigh
a
them.
Fistful of them at the bottom.
Go and weigh them. I've seen, there's a, follow the shrinkflation trend on TikTok.
Yeah?
And there are women who are out there weighing shit.
They've got
and
their little scale, really.
In South Africa. And we are being lied to badly.
So you mean they say 200 grams, for example.
Not.
It's like 100?
Yeah, 120.
Wow.
And then also the fact
that son of a bitch.
The chocolate goes from 58 grams to 52.
And we don't notice.
You charge the same or more.
Hey, listen, shops, I know you guys need to make your margins. I know you're in business. Don't lie to us, hey?
Well, it's not the shop. They don't make the things. They just sell the things.
The manufacturers.
The way they sell them. So one of the retailers being called out is Checkers for having these bulk sales, like, you know, buy 15 Kit Kats.
Yeah.
And then you go and see that it's the ones that have just recently gone down in size, but the prices.
My local shop, they did a really bad thing the other day. And I don't want to sound like Isabel Jones from the 90s talking about consumer shit. So I wanted to buy there's some snacks and shit. And they had just with packing tape, you know, that thick, sticky tape? They just like, they put two of the packets together and sticky taped them. So they don't give you the option of just buying the one because you have to buy the two. Then I get to the till with this shitty thing with the sticky tape. And she's like, oh. And she's ringing it up, the cashier. And she's looking at the expiry date, and she's like, oh, don't worry, you still got 14 days.
That's so odd.
I was like, oh, I see what's happening here. So what clearly happened is a decision was made at head office, and you guys have got to stop doing this to us. These things are going to expire soon. So before they can become poisonous and dangerous to eat and give people the shits and all kinds of other things, we're going to sticky tape them together.
Give you a
bundle and make it
deal.
Look like it's a deal. Mm. But actually, we're just moving stock off the shelves. I was very annoyed by that.
Industry.
I'm sorry.
I mean, what did you want to do? Did you want to buy them and keep them for 3 weeks?
No, but I just don't like that I could see them looking at me like a rubbish bin for their old shit.
But in some cases,
I should have put it back
on
the shelf.
People don't
care.
That's what
I should have done.
So if there's a special on tins of tomato,
yeah,
you know that, yes, they might be clearing it, but also they clear shit because there's a better version coming. That's what you've got to be scared about, especially when it comes to
guys, this
beauty
is just
product.
Basic retail, tough times. People are trying to,
all right,
stay in the game, and here you are coming in saying, I don't like your deal.
So Carl DeSantos says, Ben, you'll like this. My old decrepit brain-damaged mom makes the best Christmas mince pies in the whole world. Time is ticking on those bad boys.
I just have to stand up for anybody who we haven't acknowledged.
Uh-oh.
Talking about these.
Are you talking about the Iroquois
the
people?
Of who, Christmas mince pies.
Oh, yeah, lots of people
I cannot stand
people
it.
Hate the fruit, the mince. You get those people who don't like that. It's like people who hate raisins within
sweets. I'd have a
sweets.
Panettone over
panettone is great. Pie. I'll have both.
No one's going to stop either of you from having your mince pies or your panettone.
You know what?
Right?
It's obviously, I mean, like the mince area is up for discussion, but it's the pastry, it's the outer, it's the crust.
The sugar.
It's just a
texture of the sugar on the pie.
It's a very well constructed thing.
Durban Dope says toothpaste tubes are smaller but cost more.
Mm.
I haven't noticed that, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Make your own, guys. Fuck.
Look at that.
I've seen
320 to 250. Yeah, I've seen those. You don't get 320 mils at all of anything. It used to be
looks like it's lost some teeth.
It used to be 330, the can, right? Now I think it's 300.
No, it was actually, there was a band called 340 mils.
340 mils was always the basic standard.
That was where it started.
That's what we grew up
with. South African band.
Then it went to 330, now it's at 300.
Mm.
Yeah, well, look, soft drinks, you shouldn't be drinking that much anyway, but that's not an excuse. If you work hard for your money and you want to buy a fucking 340 ml can, you should be able to.
People are making shortcuts.
And also, I mean, put up that example again, because both of those, they've also, the government's taking their piece in the sugar tax, right? Yeah. Now, I don't like fat people. You know how I feel about fat people. You know how I feel about eating and drinking shit and making yourself obese. But I will tell you, it's not the government's responsibility to get you to be thin.
That definition on the screen of shrinkflation is actually a little bit incorrect.
Reducing the size, quantity, or weight of the product instead of increasing its price.
And
that's
increasing
its
price.
Yeah, that's
because
marketing.
What they're doing is they're decreasing the size and increasing the price at the moment.
Guys, look, this is the world we live in, right?
Yeah.
What I will say is that Toblerone is probably still my favorite chocolate. There's something magical about a Toblerone as well.
Something interesting. I was eating what are those? Not the Ferrero Rocher, the other ones, a lint ball with the ganache inside.
Ooh.
And you know how the chocolate on the ball melts? And then you get to the ganache, and the ganache always feels cold somehow. Tastes cold, feels cold. And I looked it up for the first time in 40 years.
And what have you learned?
And it's because the chocolate has a lower melting point. So the chocolate around it, your mouth heat melts quickly.
Yeah.
But the ganache has a higher melting point. And so it actually draws the heat from your tongue and mouth, making it feel cold.
Well, these are the food scientists that play that make us into gluttons.
Mm.
Like, it's absolute.
So clever.
It's brilliant. It's genius.
Mm.
It's terrible for your diabetes, but it's wonderful what they can do to our mouth pleasures. It really is.
Yeah. It's that whole thing as well about when Americans started getting fat was at a certain point in history, and it was in the late 70s, early 80s is when Americans started getting really fat. And at that point, that's when food scientists had realized that the way to people's hearts was through crunchy food.
Yeah.
that didn't contain any substance. So therein came the pizzas, the crisps.
Yeah.
These like all-in-one meals.
Yeah.
Where you were no longer chewing through broccoli and you know, spending time on eating a piece of broccoli.
I want to have your opinion, you two, on this quickly, and then we've got to get to the sport because there's plenty to talk about there. While we're on this food thing, there's been a huge controversy in America about these food stamps. You know, the SNAP benefits is what they call them in America. Because of the government shutdown, which has just ended, and one of the reasons that they wanted to end the shutdown is because they said, oh, but these people on food stamps, you know, there are literally Americans that are going to die. This is what people were saying. They're going to starve to death. SNAP benefits, food stamps in America. Turns out there are millions of people who've been defrauding it for years. They've got like six different – they go to six different states to get the benefits of a one card. They've got a lot of the shops that are in cahoots with people who are on benefits because they'll go in, they'll buy 10 things, and then the shop will give them money in exchange once they've bought the things because they're both basically defrauding the American taxpayer. Also, they discovered that 75% of the people on food stamps are obese, and a further 20% are overweight, which means that about 2 to 5% the people that remain are not obese or overweight. No one's going to starve if you take away food stamps in America, right? No one's starving. A lot of those people keep living for the next 20 years on the fat stored that they've in their bodies. Now, these are not people going to die anytime soon.
Remember too that those food coupons are for mainly, as they say in America, produce. So processed foods.
Oh, no.
As opposed to fresh stuff.
These people are buying it for them. They're choosing those things. No one's buying. They're not buying vegetables and meat.
They're buying Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, correct. They're buying like packets of sweets and candy, as the Americans call it. And I don't know how anyone puts up with this. Like, again, it seems to me that there are a group of people in the world who are just parasites that rely on the stupidity and or kindness and generosity of other people. And they abuse that at will and then get really cross when you go, you're eating sweets and chips on my dime? And I don't understand how this is sustainable. I don't know how Americans haven't, because Americans tend to be quite sensible about economic things. I don't know how they haven't just said, listen, you fat parasites, we're not fucking buying you food stamps anymore. We're not paying for your groceries anymore. That's essentially what it is. It's people who are already supporting their own families, working a job, having to pay for their own groceries, then also having to pay for someone else's groceries. And as a result of that, the prices for everything going up, so they're paying twice. Mm. How is that right?
Yeah.
How's that right?
So, I mean, there's always been like jokes around people who game the system.
Yeah.
But they brazenly do it though. And you see even like sitcoms take it and use it for their sort of scripts. But this has been going on for ages.
Coupon moms.
Yeah, coupon moms. It's a thing in America. And I don't get it. I really don't. I mean, like, there's this one woman that was on one of the news networks. I saw a clip on Instagram last week from her. She is an immigrant. She can hardly speak English, but she's been in America for 30 years. Now, she's on food stamps, and she says, I am going to starve if they take away my food stamps. I am very, very worried about this. Donald Trump, you're a very bad man. I'm like, okay, sweetheart, like 30 years, you should have learned not to talk like Sofia Vergara playing a role on a sitcom of the Latin woman who can't speak English. 30 fucking years you've had to learn to not sound like a parody. She couldn't do that. 30 years you've been on food stamps. You haven't found a job. You haven't figured out a way to feed yourself. And you haven't found a way to bring value to the economy rather than taking away from it. What is wrong with you? And people like that are the ones who pull society down. I just don't see anything.
Lead weights.
Like how can we evaluate people on the basis of what they are able to bring to the party and what they take away? see that they're taking away everything and somehow still consider them valuable additions to society. They're not. And I don't know why the people who are have to be punished the whole time.
Well, if we
do the people who put in more than they take out keep being abused, and the ones who are taking out instead of putting in keep getting rewarded? That doesn't seem right to me. Happens here too. It doesn't just happen in America.
Yeah, I mean, look, you never want the state or government to have too much control of anything, but KPIs for society, it's quite a fun idea. You know, we spoke last time around, like, you know, you should be able to vote based on what you do for SARS.
Sure.
And tax and that kind of stuff. But yeah, you're so right. Because the mindset of that woman, Consuelo Pathetheth, she just wants to, it's like, you are only looking after me. There's no two-way street here. You must look after me. That's no responsibility for me.
Gareth, is it wrong to not have any respect for a beggar or someone who gives money to a beggar? It's not about respect. I mean, I think human life has value, right? All human life has value.
All humans have potential.
And you can't say someone is worthless because they might surprise you. There are lots of good arguments about people who have written symphonies and invented great things that have allowed other people to live better lives, that have solved massive universal human problems. And maybe at some point in their life, they were very disappointing and needed some help. I get that. We all need a bit of help occasionally. But if you've spent, like that woman I was talking about earlier, 30 years and you've not learned to speak English properly, I eventually compassion has to run out. You cannot be endlessly compassionate and endlessly empathetic. There is a cost to that too, and the cost is on you.
What about being a South African who has listened to other languages going on around you for nearly 50 years, and yet you don't speak one?
Like who? Do you have an example?
Do you know any other languages, South African languages?
Yeah, I can speak a little bit of Setswana. I mean, I can understand a little bit of Zulu.
But you're saying
and Afrikaans.
That person who's Spanish
yeah.
should be able to...
No, she's from Mexico. Speak. She's an illegal immigrant to America. Yeah, she should have
because
learned...
she's been exposed
in 30
to
years, she lives in a country where the main medium of communication is English. That fucking woman should have learned to speak some fucking English. There's no excuse.
I don't know. I feel kind of weird that I've been around... I've been listening to Zulu. I studied Zulu in varsity
but
at
English
school.
English is the primary
and I've been around
language of operation.
So much Zulu, yet I cannot speak Zulu properly.
Well, we spoke about this just the other day. I had Summer Sambiton here, and he was saying one of the sad things for him is that the medium of instruction in most schools in South Africa, rural schools, you know, ordinary government schools – they aren't even bothering with any of the official languages except English anymore. And they can hardly do that properly too.
Yeah.
So everything's falling apart
yeah,
below
it.
That. We can't say – you can't really equate this. In America, the medium of communication is English. This woman came from Mexico. She's had 30 years to learn it. It's not hard. In 30 years. And you need to, on a daily basis, communicate with other people to get things done.
Yeah, no, I understand. The same would apply. I mean, if I moved to France,
you would have to learn French. Yeah, you would.
Yes.
And unless you're a complete lummox, which clearly this woman is, that's why she's been on food stamps for 30 years too. You've got to be a vital part of society, contribute and add value. I don't see how people can live any other way.
Mm.
And I think there are a lot of people in the world who just choose to parasitize. They just like
ticks.
Hop on like a big fucking blue tick on the ass of the dog. That's what it is.
On that note.
Are you going to make your way?
I'm going to make my
way. Actually, there's a very dignified exit here. Let's just cross right in front of. Bye.
Bye,
ass.
Bye, Ann.
All right, so Ben, what do we got in the world of sport to pay attention to this weekend?
Yeah, good weekend, Gareth. So the Proteas are in India.
Yes,
so, you know,
what are they doing there?
Well, they're playing cricket.
I thought they were on their Christmas shopping spree.
Must have shift, James. Okay,
what's
I'm going to move quickly.
Oh. James, why are you rearranging my studio while I'm trying to have a conversation with people? Okay. All right.
just slide guys okay. in. Oh, that's actually more comfy. It's so cuck sitting over there.
Is that the shit side? It's maybe you've worst. Got a. Have it's, you got scoliosis or something?
No, it's the worst because the microphone position is not great and it's not as comfy.
Okay, this is better.
It's much better.
All right, so back to India and the Proteas.
Yeah, okay. So look, the Proteas are in India now and they're in for a proper tour. So I know SA20 is coming up and that's the really big thing. But right now, the Proteas have two test matches. So the first one started today.
Uh-huh.
Next one, 22nd November. Then they've got three ODIs that go from November 30th, 3rd December, 6th December. And then they've got five T20s.
Five?
I mean, this is like a extravaganza that they're getting into.
So there's another thing about this time of year you've got to enjoy, right?
Extravaganza of sport in a very different way. So yeah, two tests, three ODIs, five T20s, and this is what gives SA cricket money.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, India. We know you don't like, we don't like you that much, but we love the fact you make us rich.
There we go.
Getting the business out of the way, let's look at the actual game. So when you play subcontinent pitches, you generally want to win the toss and bat first.
Right.
If you don't, you're screwed.
Right.
When you bat last on a pitch that's doing all kinds of things, it's like lifeless, it's great for the spinners, it's very hard to bat on. You don't want that. So Oaks, they won the toss for the first test. And they were batting.
Yeah.
They were 50 without loss, but now they're 84 for three. So you can watch that the entire weekend. Hopefully Oaks do well. Rabada's unfortunately not playing.
Why?
But Temba Bhuvan is
back. So what's
happened
to Rabada?
He's got an injury. But yeah, I mean, look, spinners wicket. So we've got spinners. It's going to be a good game.
Okay.
So cricket straight up. But then, of course, the biggest thing right now is the rugby. Test matches galore. Last week, the Boca beat the French. And it was just one of those special, special moments. Galisi's 100th.
Right.
Rassie's 50th in charge. And then, yeah, I mean, Lutiago got sent off. Fair enough. But we won. We absolutely clapped them, though.
30- How long is Lut going to be in the cooler for?
Well, this is what I've got a problem with.
Okay, tell me.
And this is what I kind of, you know, pissed a lot of Irish people off this week on X about, is that Oryx seemed to get extended bans. Oryx seemed to get in front of these judicial committees where there's always a Welsh oak or an Irish guy. There's never a South African guy on these hearings, right? So, you know, when you get tried for anything in life, it's the idea of you should be tried amongst your peers.
Yes.
Why are there no South Africans ever on these hearing panels? I'm not saying that they need to be dodgy and need to be unfair, but surely a different perspective that's outside of Celtic nations who hate us might be a better start point.
Yeah, that seems bizarre. Maybe South Africans are just, again, too busy actually doing things to sit on panels.
We blackballed. So
they won't have us.
World Rugby is, I don't know, like 5 or 6 kilometers away from the Irish Rugby Union's headquarters.
Oh, right.
The URC is stationed
is it near
there?
That chip shop that
next to Chicken Inn.
The Chicken Inn that's
all there. But
Ryan
these
goes
oaks
to.
Are all mates, right? They get together and they hate us, and they really do. And this is what always pisses me off. People go, "Oh, the Springbok persecution complex."
Yeah,
blow it out your ass. We get given a rough deal, so we've seen it. Like Jan Hendrik Wessels got banned for 9 weeks for supposedly grabbing some oaks nuts. No evidence.
We talked about that on the show here.
We spoke about that.
We decided it was perfectly acceptable.
But it's no evidence. So, yes, there might have been contact with his ball sack, but to suggest his malicious intent that he grabbed and twisted, where does the guy have time to do that? He's playing rugby.
No, exactly.
So he got given a 9-week ban. Nettling Fashier, earlier this year, he had an impeccable record, right?
Yeah.
Never got banned for anything. It was a... The guy he was tackling dipped down and led with his head like a dumbass. So get what you get in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nettling Fashier is a big man. He came round. He used both his arms. Anyway, he somehow got a 4-week ban that they wouldn't even hear the appeal against. No one's getting banned.
So you're
like
saying
this.
That this thing is rotten.
I think so.
We need to abandon this. We need a new system.
Well, we need these oaks to be less like a bunch of dicks. And so this week on X, obviously, because I still post on X like it's 2003. You know, have some fun.
I wouldn't take Irish people too seriously.
No,
I mean, they've just...
I don't take most people too seriously.
I mean, have
seriously.
You seen that little man that was their president? He's now on his way out.
We spoke about that.
They've got a new woman in, but she's very left of center. She's like a poor man's version of Ursula von der Leyen of the EU. The Irish, they don't know. You should never have given them democracy. The Irish should be ruled by a tyrannical dictator who punishes them and only feeds them and pays them in potatoes. But that's just my opinion.
Okay. Well, yeah, maybe I'm not so hard and fast about things like that. But still, it's just, it's annoying. It's really, really annoying how our players are dealt
with. My ancestors spent thousands of years keeping the Irish underfoot. The moment they took their foot off the throat of the Irish, they started behaving abominably, blowing things up. I mean, I'm horrified. They need control.
But I just want to kind of like put a pin in this and finish this off, this whole disciplinary thing, is that it's always broken. We touched on this before. The referee on Saturday's match, when Lota Yaga clattered into that Ramos guy, he was right in front of him. He was the closest person in the entire world to that physical exchange.
Right.
And he said, play on. Nothing happened, right? He didn't look at it and go, wow, that guy's safety is in danger. That guy almost attempted murder on him.
Yeah.
So there's a massive disconnect between that happening live, an experienced referee not having anything to say about it, to now being on the other side where the disciplinary committee comes together and go, that guy must be banned for four additional weeks. As a professional, he may not work for four more weeks. That's what it comes down to. These guys, this is their livelihoods, right? It's not an oak trying to fucking hit another oak. He's a professional doing his job to make money.
Right.
And it's fucking stupid because as soon as it comes up on the big screen, it's like we've got an attempt at foul play. Everyone's looking at this now, looking for the smoking gun. So no matter what you do, you're going to look like it's manslaughter. It's bullshit. In real time, it wasn't that bad. He can't get a four-week ban. But he's got a four-week ban.
You should be in charge of this. Very sensible.
It's just bollocks. It really is. But Lota Yaga is not going to be in the mix. So this week we're playing Italy.
Yes.
And Rossi was always going to ring the changes. There's been 11 changes in total to the team, as you can see there on the screen.
Look at that.
So, yeah, Sean Klein hasn't played since the Rugby World Cup final 2023. He's been playing in Ireland. I love the fact that they try to claim him. Zachary Porth, the young guy from One Big Boys High, he's back. And then Franco Mostert in the locks. He might not make the next World Cup. He's one of those stalwarts. He's probably a little bit too long in the legs to get there. But, yeah, Ben Jason Dixon's back. Also, long injury layoff. And then the back line, very, very exciting because we've got Ethan Hooker at 12 and Kane Amudi at 13. So Andre Pollard comes back to sort of steady the ship around that. It's still a bloody good side. This Italian team that we're playing this week, so much stronger than the one that we played at Loftus and then Quebecca earlier in the year. It's much stronger. It's at home. And they just beat the Wallabies last week. But another massive game. So that'll be 20-2, Italy-SA. That's the big one.
Okay. Right. Last week was difficult with that 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, French. Right? Yeah. No, you go to bed at like 1 o'clock and you just, hey, it's fine. We won. Another big game this week is England, New Zealand, obviously. Now, New Zealand kind of squeaked past Scotland thanks to Damien McKenzie's brilliance. But this week, yeah, England actually go in as favorites for this match. They hammered Australia. They beat Fiji quite comfortably. Now, England, they're always one of those teams. They so much expectation, but yet they just don't deliver when it comes to like these big games like this. So the All Blacks aren't at their full strength. There's no doubt about it. They are weakened. They obviously got battered by us in the Rugby Championship, but still a bloody good game. And then after that, the Irish will be taking on the Wallabies. They'll beat them, and then they'll feel like they'll be so confident going into next week. But basically, next week in rugby is going to be one of the biggest grudge fest because the Irish, I believe, are a bunch of dicks.
Yeah, good.
And we are hated. I will say on the other side of things, in rugby, I don't like the Irish. In golf, in general, like I do like the Irish.
Okay. I take back nothing I said earlier.
That's fine. That's absolutely
fine. Should
be
punished. I discovered that it was an ancestor of mine that was sent there by Cromwell during the interregnum between Charles I and Charles II. He was sent there to ruthlessly put down the Irish. His surname was Cliff. I'm so proud of him. Fucking watch out, you Irish.
Well, they should come back to the disciplinary committees. So, look, there's two other big things that's happening this weekend, of course. Oh, yeah. Bafana Bafana playing Zambia in a friendly tomorrow at 3.
Yeah.
No biggie. But, I mean, it's there, if you know, okay, if you want your Bafana fix. But there's also the race of the Dubai and the DP World Tour.
Yes.
So that all culminates this weekend. Now, Rory McIlroy is the greatest European golfer of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I know Colin Montgomery has won the Order of Merit on what was the European Tour eight times. He won it seven times in a row. Rory has won it five times. This will be the sixth time. Sorry, this will be the seventh time he wins this weekend.
Okay.
That's a lot. But something that's quite interesting about, we talked about shrinkflation earlier.
Mm.
Golf is the opposite here. So in 1975, Gareth, the winner of the Order of Merit won 21,000 euros in today's money. 21,377 euros in 1975. You know who that was?
Gary.
Dale Hayes.
Dale Hayes.
In 1975, Dale Hayes played 15 events.
Okay.
Probably got hammered after every single one of them.
Yeah, sure.
And his take home was €21,377.
Okay.
Last year, Rory McIlroy, in 12 events, he won the Order of Merit thing. He played 12 events, so three less than Dale. He won €9,170,631.
Doesn't seem fair, does it?
I mean, justice for Dale.
Yeah, I reckon that they should compensate Dale.
Dale should get back paid.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we all know Rory's just he's so rich. He's got everything going for himself other than a great marriage, apparently. That's neither here nor there.
Okay.
But, yeah, he's phenomenal. He's the greatest guy in golf outside of Scottie Scheffler when you look at world rankings. And basically, Marco Penge or Tyrrell Hatton could dethrone him this weekend. But Rory, like a true champ, just comes out swinging big dick on round one. He shot a 66. Penge was one over. Hatton was only two under. So, yeah, Rory's going to romp to a seventh DP World title, which will be one over Seve and one behind Monty. But he is Europe's greatest golfer ever, and it's something to behold. And then finally, there's the MMA, UFC 322.
Yeah, one of the questions in the comments here. Question for Ben, Islam or Jack Valentino or Welly?
It's so hard not to think Islam's going to win here because Islam should be a welterweight. He was always lightweight, which is fine because he can cut the weight.
Right.
But he's got the frame to go upper division. He now is upper division. He's big, strong. You know those Dagestanis, they also like skip the testing pool because they live in the arse end of a goat.
Right.
So it's difficult to test these oaks. Performance-wise, I'm sure they're very above board. But, you know, Jack Della Maddalena, great fighter, hard as knuckles, got even a worse nose than Quacka Smith. That shows you how committed he is to contact sport.
Right.
It's going to be an amazing fight. It really will be. I think Islam fighting a striker as good as that's going to retest certain faculties. But ultimately, Islam can finish the fight in different ways. So I'll give it to him. It's going to be very, very tight. And then, yeah, Valentina Shevchenko versus Weili Zhang. Weili Zhang, my favorite UFC women's fighter. She's always very entertaining. She's now going up to basically fight against Shevchenko, who is like the greatest outside of Amanda Nunes in women's MMA. So, yeah, they're both quite long in the tooth, huh?
Mm.
I mean, Shevchenko's 37, Zhang's 36.
Yeah.
And I would just say that...
Too old, on the shelf.
No, it's such a tough fight to call because Zhang's got more sort of tempo, I would believe. She would really try to force the pace.
Okay.
But Shevchenko is slightly bigger, and she's ginger and she's Russian. So, you know, it's just so hard to pick, Gareth. It's so hard to pick.
Couple of questions or comments for you, Ben. Andrew says, funny how many Irish clubs went bust in the past 2 years. I didn't know about that. Is that true?
Irish rugby is just a weird thing here. Basically, Leinster gets all the cash and the other ones have got to like try play along. It's not that I dislike. So someone said to me in the comments, you're so rattled because the Box have lost to Ireland 4 out of the last 5 times. That doesn't bother me, actually. It really doesn't. Good for them. In that process, we won 2 World Cups. But there's just something off about those Oaks when it comes to rugby. I don't know what it is.
Sia Bangiana says, England are much like the South African post office. They do not deliver.
Yeah, but people still expect from England, whereas no one expects from the post office.
Right. Okay, fair enough. Well, joining us now, thank you, Ben. That was terrific. Oh, by the way, what's on the bounce this week?
Nothing. Nothing this week.
I mean, not this week, because you know, it's now once a month.
Once a month, monthly show.
What do you got on the menu coming up? Because I know you're always busy working on these
things. We've got a great SA20 show, because it's going to be 30 days pre-tournament. So we're going to catch up on all the things that are going to be around that. I would still suggest, if you haven't seen the Flip Funder Merva interview that I had with him at Benchwarmers, cool guy, cool rugby insights that are going to be worth tapping into.
That is available now. You can go and watch that.
And then, into December itself, Gareth, we're actually going to physically go on the road a bit with the SA20. Awesome. It's exciting. The tournament's going to be so great. It really is. I'm huge excited.
And by the way, while you're looking for things to entertain yourself while you may be driving around or taking some time off, we've got a brand new season of Blind History, which started this week. Henry VIII, the first episode. But we were talking about sport, and someone who also loves sport is our next guest. You know that he is a passionate sportsman. Do you know that this guy actually is chairman of the Guatemala Cricket Club? Are you still?
I still am for my sins, yeah?
Look at you, BC yeah, Tete. Yeah, how are yeah. you?
Hello, G. What's
nice
happening,
to see
brother?
You, Mona BC.
Hola. Hola.
Good to see you. You're the chairman of the Quad Democratic Club. How do you like
amongst
that?
Amongst many other things.
Yeah, I know.
The last time I saw you, you were in George because you just opened a coffee shop at the airport.
Yeah. Still straddling along there in George. Nice. But there's a lot of sports that happens in George as well.
Listen, dude, you talk about that, but it's I know you'd opened up a restaurant, but it turns out this guy's got. So, have you been to Can Pie at the Keys Art Mile? Have you been to the Prawnery?
Did you just speak English there?
The Keys Art Mile, it's here in Rosebank. Don't be a fucking idiot.
I will though. Now that
friend
I know.
You are, hey Kapinski.
Yeah,
he said he couldn't read earlier, and now he's Kiki.
No, it's true. Can Pie is the one, and the Prawnery is the other.
Yeah,
I mean, this man's opening up new businesses every other day of the week and twice on Sundays. You've been busy.
You make me sound like I'm Indian. I get a corner and I
no,
open up a shop.
No, what I'm, I know you've been
Indian restaurants too.
Yeah. You know what I love is I don't get to speak to BC that often, but whenever I do, he's doing something audacious and new, and it seems like most of the stuff that you do just turns to gold. I don't know how you get it right, and restaurants are hard, man.
Oh, can you see, bro?
Restaurants
I've aged. Overnight.
How did you how did you make all of this happen so quietly in the background while the rest of us have just been doing the same old, huh?
you know, my friend, it's always people make it sound like it's easy, but when you got a really good team of people and you enjoy what you do, I suppose that kind of brings it to the party. But restaurants they take time.
Yeah.
So you have to give yourself time to set up. But if you have a really good team. So I surround myself, like you, with people like Kapinski, you know, who make things happen.
Don't let him into the restaurant. He'll eat you out of house and home.
Yeah.
Or he'll drink all my...
So, okay. Before we get onto this thing, this Art and Bubbles affair, which we'll talk about in a second, it could only have been devised by the mind of Siya Sangweni.
He's over
my
there.
Secret
I mean,
is
what
out.
A day. He's sitting right there.
People are going to just want you to say hello at some point, whether you like it or not.
Should we swap out?
No. We'll get to Sia. Don't worry. Sia, he's camera shy these days. I notice.
It's quite a burn here, Sia, because I mean, I'm spent here. Gareth still doesn't want to sub me out. He's still keeping me on the field.
All right. Well, you can go. Get out of here. Thank you, Ben. I want to talk to Munwa BC. Sia, come and join us. This will be fun. No, come on. It's not like you're afraid. So, BC, while he's making his way in here, you always do 10 things at once. I let you in and you take over, like you're producing the show again.
Get the main stage.
Ben, you're right. Did it
How are you, Sangweni? It's nice to see you.
Very early this morning.
Yeah, it's early, huh?
Okay.
You're looking terrific.
This was my gym wear outfit.
So the reason I mentioned you and now have strong-armed you into joining us here is because it doesn't sound, for all his genius, like the Art and Bubbles affair is something that you would have come up with. He helped you with that.
One of his mind is actually really, really fascinating, and he moves at like 30,000 kilometers
I know.
An hour.
He's just opened two more restaurants since we sat down.
I know. Yes. So we're catching those balls and we're making magic.
All right. So let's do this straight away because I think now people are going to be curious about it anyway. From the 5th until the 7th of December, there's this cultural festival you guys have got going on. And apparently champagne is involved. Mm. Which is hence the bubbles.
It's calories, Gareth.
But tell me what this is all about. What's the inspiration here? What's the idea? How do people get involved? Give us the lowdown.
Well, I mean, we are in Keys Art Mile, which is, you know, Joburg doesn't have a lot of great winelands, but we're quintessential Joburg. We love cosmopolitan things and we're city slickers. So from the 5th to the 7th of December, we'll be in Keys Art Mile, which has great art galleries, you know, all of those
such
galleries.
Such a great place. Yeah. And you can actually do like pedestrian type stuff there, you know.
Exactly.
You've got incredible restaurants. You've got incredible art galleries. You've got... shops. There's lots going on there. It's beautiful.
And we were just thinking, how do you learn more about art? How do you learn more about, you know, what makes a great art piece? What is a great artist?
Most people just lie.
We all lie. Right? Let's just be honest about it. No. We lie about it. And so we were like, let's teach people.
Oh my God, that painting is so great. Meanwhile, it's
and you know
absolute
nothing.
Shit.
You know nothing
that,
about
I
it.
I hate that about artists. Oh man.
So we were like, let's teach people in a cool and fun way. And so when you're learning about art, what's a great compliment to that? Maybe some great bubbles.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think about champagne, but actually.
With some people's arts, yeah, you have to be drunk to appreciate it.
To
Let's
appreciate
be fair.
That.
Right? Let's be fair.
But also champagne, you know, as great as it is, you know, we have great cup classique in South Africa. And Monabisi with the restaurants as well has taught me a lot about that.
I've taught him how to drink properly.
Tell me about this.
We've moved him from tequila.
Oh, that was my fault.
That was your fault.
What have you brought him into the world? The champagne, champagne.
Champagne, yes. Bubbles.
Méthode champenoise.
Méthode
right?
de classe, cup classique.
Right.
Yes.
I can rattle off Carver from Spain and
but this is what you've always wanted to do, Sia. You were always pretentious beyond belief. Now you can actually back it up.
Monovis, is that true?
Yes.
She's my friend.
Yeah.
No, but it's not untrue. And it's not an insult to you.
I think
you've
so.
You've always been a pompous, pretentious ass who needed to let everybody know how clever and how sophisticated you were.
I've always identified as a Santon Kugel.
And Sia, the fact is, you are a sophisticated and intelligent person. And most of us caught on long ago. So if you can just tone it down a little, we will love you even more.
He's getting worse.
Yes,
he's getting worse.
He is getting worse.
I mean, because of course we need to shut some oysters.
Just want to say I'm really happy to see you two.
Yeah.
This is so much fun.
It's like a reunion,
so,
right?
I love seeing you so much. I might even come to this thing. 5 to 7 December. So you got champagne, you got art, you got food.
Yeah.
What else do you want?
We've got unsigned artists. We've got signed artists.
Okay.
We're giving people a platform from the cheapest to the most expensive art piece.
Okay.
So
that's good.
You got and we got street art. We got people who paint on site. Come see us.
Some ballerinas, because why not? We have some great chefs who will be cooking right in front of you for that experience. We have a premium dinner on the Friday evening, all the way to like a great Sunday lunch experience. You know, it's December. It's that first weekend of
love
December.
It. Love it.
Just before Joburg shuts down. So we want people to really just usher in December, usher in summer in the best way possible.
And you know, when I had the guys from this luxurious marble circus here a little
Our
while
neighbors,
ago.
Our neighbors, we're in the same building as
right,
them.
Yeah. Exactly. When I had them here the other day, we were talking about how Joburg needs events. Joburg needs things for us to get excited about because it's a great place.
Yeah.
And you know, as much as we complain and most people want to be on holiday somewhere else, Joburg's an awesome place to be, especially in December. A lot of other people are gone, so it's not as busy.
Yeah.
You can find parking. You can meet the people that also
explore.
Were smart enough not to go away.
Yeah.
Things are happening, and you're creating events like this. This is terrific.
Yeah, you know, like you're saying, Joburg needs entertainment. Mm. And it's not just doof doof all the time. And even that, we're probably still short on, you know. So for us, it was like, okay, we've got culture, we've got the artists. What do we export the most out of South Africa? And you find that we export entertainment. Mm. We've got the likes of Trevor Noah. We've got – so that's what we're known for, artists, Nelson Makamo. You know, the Magugu family, you know. So we export all of that. Why don't we enjoy it within the confines of our backyard, you know? That's.
And I mean, Rosebank's a great example of that.
Yeah, Rosebank's
so
safe. So
much
now
happening
because,
at the moment.
You know, there's a lot of policing, there's a lot of security companies. People walk in Rosebank now, you know.
So will that still be the case after the G20 is cleared out, though? People need to know, Monwabisi. People are shitting themselves that in the moment the G20 ends, all the machoshas will be released off the streets
machoshas.
Again.
The bonuses. We get the bonuses. You make bonuses. You make your base salary. And if you don't make your base salary, you're in trouble.
How have you been besides work?
I've been a dad.
Yes.
I've been coaching my own son play cricket, soccer, you know, attending a lot of netball. So I've been a dad.
Okay.
Traveling a lot.
That's all my brother does. He's just constantly taking children to and from sports events and school.
It's a full-time job.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job.
And the schools have no – they have absolutely no shame. They will organize – my brother had to take the youngest one
– yeah.
Benoni.
Oh my gosh.
For a cricket match or something the other day. While his wife took the older one.
Oh yes, the split.
To Pretoria.
Yes.
And the schools are like,
yeah,
this is fine.
Yeah.
Sorry, parents. I mean, they don't have a life.
No.
And Mondays they've got something, Tuesday they've got something. Yeah. So I'm surprised you have time to run all these 700 restaurants.
And Uncle G's also called in every now and then to please play Minister of Transport.
Ah. Not never going to happen.
You ever?
Never.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that happen.
Must never. I do. I get
there
into trouble.
Some things have got to change, bro. Come
no,
on.
No, no, no. So, no, I went 3 weeks ago to a cricket match where both of them were playing on separate fields at the same place. I got to see them both. And it was actually really cool.
That's nice.
No, I liked it.
Yeah. Cricket's the whole day. So you choose the sport where you now have to. It's either like 10 minutes.
I don't
to
go the
like
whole day.
Hours.
Are you insane?
Bro,
I arrived there at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I arrived there at like. I don't know, 8, 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I think they started at 7:45. And then I left at lunchtime. I think this is enough. This is great. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I can understand, you know, you see all the parents know the other parents. Mm. And
yeah,
they'll talk to
each
other.
Yeah.
They'll cheer in each other's kids. And it's all very nice. Yeah. It's just, I don't need to do that every weekend. But it's nice to do. And I do, I've noticed with my two nephews, they're becoming real people now.
Yeah.
You can have conversations with them.
Yeah.
They've got a sense of humor.
Yeah.
I like that. You know, when they were like 6 years old,
yeah.
What are you going to talk to them about?
No, no.
Just want fucking sweets.
You know, Garish reminds me, I never thought I would call restaurants my children.
Oh, yeah.
But it's
they
very,
are a bit like that.
They're very much like that. You've got your workforce and then you've got your consumers. And then you've got this thing where you just constantly need to be there. Oh, my child, are you okay, my child?
But when do your children, the restaurants, grow up and you can actually enjoy them?
That's a good question.
Do they ever grow up?
No, because it sounds to me like it's a constant. I mean, you know, there are I know there are people who have a genuine, like you, they have a love for creating magic for other people, whether it's in taste or in sight or in sound or in, and that's what you do, and you do it really well. But fuck, it's hard work.
Oh, thanks.
You have to chase those margins.
Yeah,
there are lots of other people competing for those brands.
Yeah,
if you make one mistake, they are all over you over it. Even though you put out 200 dishes a night and they're all great, there's going to be one where. I don't know, the tomato wasn't as fresh as you would have liked.
Yeah.
And then it ends up in front of the person who's going to complain the loudest.
Yeah, and boy, do they complain.
Thankless business,
man. Yeah, no, it is. You know, the one day, David and I were having a conversation, and I was like going on for myself, and he was going on. And I think we had a come to Jesus moment, if there's such a moment, right?
This is David from Saints.
Yes.
Right.
And he was saying, you know, you can't please everybody. And then the conversation just went silent for like a while. And we all like, actually, yeah, we cannot please everybody. But those that know how much love we pour into this, they will know. And they will keep coming back. You know, the naysayers, you know, the weirdest thing was seeing a black man open up a Japanese restaurant. That was like now the ultimate, right?
But you also, I mean, I was teasing Sia about being sophisticated. You have always been this guy who's kind of – you have a very good sense of taste at the high end. And I think people respond to that well, whether it's in food or in the appearance of the place. Or
I must be on the Garish show quite often.
No, no, no.
There's compliments.
And it's not because you're my friend. I haven't seen you in ages. It's a universal truth. Everyone who knows this guy, Munwabisi, they know he's a very, very sophisticated gentleman. So I also believe – that you are on this Federated Hospitality Association of South Africa.
Yes.
And on the board of Cape Town Tourism.
Yes.
How do you find time for all this shit?
Once again, very amazing question.
Right?
How do you find all this time? 24 hours, guys. You know, I think it's fun. I stopped working a long time ago. I don't have a job.
The
I
only
think this
job
is
you had
calling.
At one point was doing that show with... Oh. What was our show called with you?
Black Life.
With Tumi Shomasha. And one more bisutete.
I'm sure we can find the podcast somewhere. Yeah, we can.
That was the only job you had for a bit. Now you've got 500 different roles. Okay, what is the Fidasa one? What do you do there?
You know, so agnostic is my new word. Like, yeah. We exist in different spaces. Right. Yeah. So one minute you're a DJ at night, next thing you're talking politics.
Sure.
Then you're building a media business. So I think for me to be quite one sided would be quite trivial in this.
Yeah, everyone wants to put you in a box and actually you are many different things.
And I'm not in a box, you know, like I said, I'm a dad on a weekend, and then you build businesses. I enjoy building businesses. So whether it's in solar, whether it's in media, you know, Cape Town tourism, they allow us to like speak tourism stuff, meet different people from different. That's how I got exposed to the Japanese culture.
Mm.
And I love the Japanese culture to a point we sleep on the floor, you know, those guys are like,
what are you talking? Just go back. Whoa. You sleep on the floor.
I sleep on a mat.
You sleep on a mat now.
Yeah, sleep
you don't
on
have a
futon.
Mattress. You don't have a bed.
No mattress. I sleep on the floor.
If I go to your house, is it all those screen doors? And
not
you
yet.
Sleep on
not
the floor
yet.
On a bamboo mat.
Yes, that's the one.
No cushions?
No cushions.
And?
My back pain stopped like immediately. Those guys are living
it's
in 2080.
Kidding.
I promise you, the Japanese culture is insane.
I do think that they are the most evolved people on earth.
Their food, Gareth.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my goodness. The simplicity, the flavors, you know. How do you know? So for me, we took a little bit of Japan and brought it back into South Africa. And then you obviously South Africanize it. But from a state of just thinking and processing things, you know, Japan is next level, bro. Next level. I even brought back Sia in one state. You know?
I know.
No, he was there a few weeks ago, and the updates that I was getting, it's like, oh my gosh, and then they have this, and then there's a robot here, and then this, you know, just even the level of service. Because I think ultimately that's...
I haven't ever been. Have you been to Japan?
No, I haven't yet.
I'd love to go.
Favor,
I know I want to.
Tokyo
I really do.
Is like on another level. Then you go to Osaka. Like, as a foodie... I think.
Well, I'm not a foodie.
As somebody who likes their drink?
Well, even
they,
that.
They get their drink on private.
You know what I appreciate? I appreciate mastery. It's also one of the reasons I like you doing what you're doing at the moment is because it's an expression of mastery, right? If someone is really, really good and they spent a lot of time and energy and effort on learning about a particular, no matter how bizarre it is, could be... You know, I mean, one of the things I don't give a shit about sports. I'm not like you and Ben. But when I hear people talk about it with passion, and I see someone who's a master at it doing anything, to me, it would be an absolute disgrace to waste my life trying to wield a tennis racket.
Yeah.
But when I see someone else who is from an age of like 6 or 7, focused on tennis, and then they go onto the court, like these guys who you know, Carlos Alcaraz, for example. Yeah. I see this guy and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
If someone can make food the way the Japanese do, it always looks like it should be really complicated, but they keep it so simple.
So simple.
And when you taste it and you get all of that, now I'm not a foodie, but man, that I know what that is. Yeah. That is excellence.
Yeah. You know, I have this philosophy, you know, keep it so simple because, you know, people don't do simple things.
Well, I believe you because you're sleeping on a mat, you lunatic.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Oh, you have to try this.
On the wooden floor.
You have to try
this. Are you not? Do you have a blanket?
Wintertime, you have a blanket. You can put a blanket there. But generally, I promise you, like, it works. I don't have any aches, no bruises. I actually wake up and I don't have a bed to make. It just makes life so much simpler.
Sia, on the other hand, is like the princess and the pea. He has 500 mattresses and he can feel if someone leaves a...
But would you try that, Gareth?
I'd be willing to try for a night, but I don't think I'd like it in the long term. I'm a big fan of the bed, hey?
Yeah?
Big fan. I've thought about this for a long time. I like linen.
Yeah. Yeah, like you can put linen
mattress
on the floor. Yeah, you can
on the floor.
No.
Good what are we?
No.
Good linen.
Ah, please, man.
But I will also say that one of the things that you guys would agree on is the just things you do to improve and better your life.
Yeah.
Even when it comes down to juices, even when it comes down to, you know, just like little small hacks like that. I just do that to justify what you're doing, even though I won't try it.
So Sia tried to gym with us the other day.
Oh, yeah. Really? How did that go, Sia? How did that go?
He became such a diva for one day.
Did he complain?
We uninvited him.
I'm like, no.
And you know, Sangweni, some things never change.
No, they just will not. I needed to choose the right music, and then the floor was too hot, and the trainer was too loud in the morning, so no, that didn't happen.
Tracy says, Sia, you've come such a long way from confessing to once shitting in your pants restaurant connoisseur. They could sell more champagne if they took the dimple out of the bottom and made the bottles thinner. This is true. But they need that for the pouring, right?
Yes.
See, yes. Not. I may look like a Philistine, but I'm not.
Very refined.
Also, some people are very excited to see you, Monwabisi. Some people are very excited to see Sia.
Aww.
I always think
Sia, you've just hijacked my interview. So
I know.
You.
Now I'm just going to twiddle
you,
my thumbs.
Monica, sit down. Where you got time. Monica says, I always think of Sia ordering complicated things at a restaurant. Now,
still does that.
BC, let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. Because as much as we go to a restaurant and the customer's king, et cetera,
yeah.
Some customers are very complicated and make it difficult for you.
Yeah.
They want to order anything but what's on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point. Case in point.
Yeah.
Sia Sangweni.
Yeah.
Does he still do this and drive everyone crazy?
Proper crazy. And he'll be like, when his dish comes, would anyone like my dish?
No, but it's horrible because he's ruined it.
And because there's only trees and vegetables in there. And so what are we supposed to do? Oh, yes, Sia, please. We want some of that carnivoric vegetables.
That's what we want.
No, gee, people are difficult. Eh? And I think restaurants in Joburg have spoiled our clients. We've spoiled them. They know that their choice will – people will make a plan for you. You know?
Yeah, but it's too much. There's a reason that there are chefs who've studied this stuff.
Yeah.
And there are restaurant owners who develop menus. You spend an inordinate amount of time getting it right.
Yeah.
And then some schlub from the street comes in and goes, oh, I'd like that, but can you do it with, I'm lactose intolerant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you must redesign the whole menu around, who do you think you are? Elvis fucking Presley? Right?
You know, I tell people,
eat it, don't eat it.
A restaurant is 90% prep, right? So you prep your food,
yes.
You prep your flavors, you prep your sauces,
yes.
And then Sia comes, I'm dairy this, I'm that. But you know what? Chefs have become such such
Sia's
serves
just sitting there,
as
just
well.
Just taking it, huh?
Yeah, must take it.
I will say this, aren't I a blessing in disguise whenever I'm at the restaurants? You guys need to test out different meals on a vegetarian.
Last time I went, that's a hell of a way to sell yourself. I mean, like you can't find another vegetarian who's less difficult.
And that's why I don't have a summer
I had
body.
A coffee with Sia, what was it, about 2 or 3 months ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I ordered something to eat. And he was like, you could see he was, I'm not hungry.
Yeah.
Because he knew I was going to pay a huge amount of attention to what he was going to order.
Yeah.
So there was so much pressure that he just decided he wouldn't eat.
So that's where it comes from.
So I didn't lose, but he must have left there so hungry. Did you get something on the way home?
I was just stuffing my face in Santa traffic.
I love it. Oh, I love it. I derive such joy out of the way that I've psychologically tortured people for years.
No, thanks, G. We're bearing the remnants of it.
And now he's part of your problem.
Yes. No,
so you guys are working together, but let's go back to this art and bubbles thing for a second. What is the – are people encouraged to dress up for this thing? Because people love a dress up, and I don't mean like looking like the fairy godmother. I mean actually being – being stylish and looking like you belong in the Keysart Mile, for example, the different look.
Yeah, people, I think a lot of people want an excuse to, you know, have a great experience and dress up.
Yes.
So we're calling the theme Champagne Chic. You know, come in your great champagne finest.
Mm.
And just, it also just lends to the experience overall. So when you're going around and having the different bubble tastings, or when you are in the middle of a masterclass, we're bringing in an international speaker, someone from France who will be telling us what actually makes some great bubbles. Of course you want
to quaff champagne.
Of course.
So you don't drink champagne?
No, darling.
You quaff it. Champagne.
Yes, but... Okay, the little bits that I know, the smaller and the finer the bubbles, the better.
Yes.
Right.
Mm.
It mustn't be like when you open up a Coke Zero.
No.
And it froths.
No, please.
Mustn't do that. What are the other things we need to know? What have you learned from the French in your time here?
The French love detail.
Mm.
And
like the Japanese.
Like the Japanese.
Yeah. I got that in common.
I think I'm taking one thing away from you, mastery.
Yes.
Today.
Yeah.
So they love their champagne. However, the one other thing that we have in South Africa is, you know, our Cap Classiques are really, really good.
Yeah, they are good.
And I think we need to spend some time branding ourselves the way the people in Champagne have branded themselves. In order for us, because our grapes are of quite superior.
Well, they've done these blind taste tests with sommeliers and people who are experts in the field. I'm not, but they've done these experiments, and the objective fact is that the very, very best of them cannot tell the difference on a blind taste test between a good French dry champagne and a good South African brut. What do they call it? Brut, right? Brut. And a South African Cap Classique.
Très bien.
So,
très bien.
Non, je parlais français. Je comprenais tout le monde.
Très bien.
So, listen, this is terrific. I love seeing you guys again. We must. I'm going to come for the what are you calling it?
You
the
heard,
Art and
no?
Bubbles
you
Affair.
Gareth is coming.
No, I'm going to come.
We'll hold him to it.
This is what you see when your friends start doing well and they're doing cool things. You have to. I have to go. There's no way out of it for me. So now I've promised in front of all these people that I'll be there.
Yes.
Aki Anastasio tells me the other day, he's launched a new sorbet man in Bedford View. It looks amazing.
Aki.
And I have to go to that. Yeah, I have to go to your thing. I have to go to his thing. I'm filling up my year. I know I'll love it when I'm there, but I'll hate it the day before. Look at me. I'm committing to shit. I hate this. Oh, look what you've done. You've driven me insane.
It's a great excuse to catch up.
Sia, we will make a plan to have another coffee in this time. Order whatever you want. Okay. No one actually cares.
Deal.
I will not torture you mentally.
Did
it's
even
great
drink
to see
coffee?
You. I think he ordered something with skim almond milk.
Sia, you're fired.
Both of you are shaking your heads.
Tarsia milk. I think it was Madagascan Tarsia milk. They had to send someone on a plane to get it.
With some angel fluff, you know.
There we
that
go.
Was recommended by my dear friend Meghan Markle, because we know you love her.
You
so
love her.
Much.
Oh, come on. Tell me she has not disgraced herself, Sia. There is no one in America who loves her. Everyone hates her.
Well,
she's the most hated celebrity in the world.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. The last time I saw her, we were in Hyde Park Mansion garden.
Right.
Let me just pick up the name I just dropped.
Aren't you still talking to her sister who's in the wheelchair?
Yes.
Or is she still alive? Yeah.
I'll come back and I'll do an exclusive royal report. I'll do that.
Busy. This guy knows everyone. He does. He knows everyone.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, no. Monabisi beats me at that. And I don't know how he has the bandwidth standing at the restaurants. And he greets
part of the reason I want to come here is because I'm always curious to see who you guys are hobnobbing around, because you do know some very important people between the two of you.
But it also allows for, you know, just like, you know, Kanpai, since it's very Asian inspired, the entire idea is to have tapas and you share your meals so that you come together. And that's what I love, and that's what I've learned a lot around you. It's
superb.
Just, you know, creating these experiences for people to collect and bond, and that's the meaning of life, really.
Listen, BC, thank you for almost single-handedly lifting all the heavy stuff in the tourism and hospitality world. Keep doing that, because you've been a believer in this stuff, and you've not only been a believer and someone who says the right things, but you do the things too. You execute, which is just amazing. I wish you so much success. I know you don't need my wishes because you're going to have it anyway.
Thank you, Paul.
This is terrific. And between the two of you, let's make a plan soon.
Yeah, 100%.
Great to see you.
Yeah, we'll see you now in December, G.
Yeah, definitely. It's just around
the corner.
Dude, it's just around the corner. I'll be there. I mean, I might be there for 10 minutes, but I'll be there.
A win is a win. A win is a win.
I'll take that. Thank you, gents. It's so nice to see you both.
See you soon.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Sia Sangweni and Monwabisi Tete. What great human beings. You're just going to walk in front like Leanne does.
Yes, that's great.
That's all right. Sia, we have no rules here. You know, it's always chaos. Unbelievable. All right, so what a great idea. I mean, if you're looking for things to do, thank God for people like those, because those two gentlemen have made it possible for Joburg to be interesting in December. Otherwise, what the hell would you do? You'd have to – there's only so many times you can go to the cradle of humankind, you know? we've got so many other things still to come. I know the show's still got 45 minutes, and I'm going to try and squeeze it all in. We've got Gabriel Krauser joining us in just a moment or two. Gabriel here already? Oh, good. I hope you dressed like Jesus today. No, you didn't. I thought I wanted the caftan. Come and sit down. Come and have a seat, Gabriel. We're going to talk to Gabriel because I haven't spoken to him. Yeah, just do what everyone else does. Just cross in front of the camera. How are you?
Good, man.
Nice to see you. Yeah. So Gabriel was telling me while we were talking about art earlier and BC and Sia and the Keys Art Mile and everything, your mom is an artist and she had a show the other day.
She did.
An exhibition.
She had an exhibition and a book launch wrapped together.
What kind of stuff does your mum do, art-wise?
So my mom...
Your mum, the Virgin Mary.
My mother, the Virgin Mary. She wanted to be a court painter after studying art here and in Europe, in the UK, and taking a residency in Paris for a year. And by that, you know, like Velázquez, Goya, these guys would sit and paint the royals.
Yes, portraits.
Yeah. So she painted,
because you know, a lot of parvenus in the audience will have thought court painter, oh, those are the people who do those sketches of the people in court.
Dude, my mom did that once, the trial of Winnie Madikizela Mandela.
Oh wow, well that's a big one. That's a good one to do.
She heard some whispers.
If you're going to do one, that's the one,
that
right?
That is the one.
So she wanted to be a court painter. What, in oils? Large canvases?
Large canvases, oils, you know, politicians, heads of universities, academics.
Beautiful.
Civil society, celebrities. And she did a lot of that. And, you know, the apartheid museum's iconography of Mandela comes from like her portraits of Mandela.
Excellent.
So she did some big names like that. And then I would say in the 2000s, thereabouts, there was a change in political attitude towards portraiture. Mm. So a lot of the pictures that she made of former generals, Constant Viljoen, the last general of apartheid, you could say, these kinds of things started to be hidden in the attic, hidden in the basement. And the portraiture scene really changed. A lot of the new guys wanted to take photographs. They didn't want paintings. They saw it as like a dead white man thing.
Yeah, but also people have become embarrassed by excellence.
Bit of that.
If you were a monarch in Europe, the greatest political statement you can make is not with your words, but in a beautiful painting. I mean, we all think of Hyacinthe Rigaud and Louis XIV, right? That famous portrait of him in those flowing robes, the big periwig and holding a staff. And you think, well, that's majesty. That's majesty. And even if you were a groveling peasant working the fields, you could tell what the king – everything you needed to know about the king from that portrait.
It's a kind of ancestor worship too.
It is.
I think that
which you'd think would fit very well in this country.
And so sometimes it has. And there have been some families and some politicians very recently and academics, the founder of the UJ Soweto campus, for example, who've been very into this. Precisely because in a country with 11 official languages or 12 – the visual medium
speaks louder than all of them.
Speaks to all of us.
Yeah.
And so her portraiture career was resurrected there. She survived the political purges, but in that time, she decided to go down a new road and do some abstract expressionist paintings that are like the opposite of the photorealistic stuff that she did. And some of them have been, she lives in Joburg CBD today and has throughout my life. And some
of it is. Why does she do that? Why does she live in the CBD? Well, don't you worry about her?
I do worry about her sometimes, but she's got a very beautiful home.
I'm sure it's magnificent, but she's in the fucking CBD.
Yeah, how do I put this?
Drag her out with a with a chain if you have to.
It's a complicated. She has a very complicated.
She's an artist, of course.
Relationship. She's a maverick. She doesn't do what she's told. She doesn't do what she's supposed to.
But now this all makes sense, Gabriel, because we've never, in all the years I've known you, we've never spoken about your mother, your family, any of that stuff. Now I understand why you're such a free thinker. Because clearly this is also in the genes, and it was in the way you were raised. For people who don't know, Gabriel's been on the show a couple of times, but I'll give you a little background here. He's a policy fellow and executive director of the Institute of Race Relations. You're their legal guy as well, right?
Yeah.
And of course, the IRR, Institute of Race Relations, is a Joburg-based policy think tank. You've spoken to me about all kinds of things, ordinary pedestrian politics, policy stuff, which is a lot more complicated, research stuff, which is also complicated. And the Institute of Race Relations has proposed the Value for Money Bill. This is the last thing I read from you, which is a new procurement reform aimed at saving South Africa billions by replacing the current race-based points-driven tender system with one that is focused, oh please God, on performance, transparency, and accountability. Oh, I hope this happens. I hope even a quarter of it happens. The bill argues that transformation means delivering quality and efficiency to those most in need, not rewarding political connections. Who, with a brain the size of a frog, would not understand this to be a massive, massive, obvious plus for a country that has been run into the ground over the last 30 years?
Well, unfortunately, no one in Parliament seems to understand it.
You've proposed this. So as a third party, you're non-elected group of people. You've been sitting there trying to solve problems because you look at this, you go, well, these morons can't. So my word, you didn't say morons. These guys can't. Here, we'll sit down with smart people. We'll look at the best case scenarios from all over the world. How has it worked? Where hasn't it worked? What can we learn? Let's make it happen. And then you take them, this work of art in policy, and you say, here is the Value for Money Bill. South Africa will thank you for it. You politicians could take all the credit if you want. We've done all the hard thinking for you.
Huh?
Take it. And what do they do?
Yeah, they're not taking it yet, but I think that they will.
What keeps you optimistic?
A beautiful story was recounted to me earlier this week by a colleague of mine, Herman Pretorius. A poll that I think was done by the Institute of Race Relations in 1987 found that only 23% of white South Africans at that stage supported the Group Areas Act. Three quarters opposed it. Now, to get from 1987 to 1992, where you have a referendum where two-thirds of whites vote against apartheid, that's right. 5 years. You take another 2 years to get to the actual first all-race democratic election, another 2 years to get the constitution, and several more years for the facts on the ground to change to the point where, like now you walk around Sandton, Rosebank, whatever, you can't tell, is this a white area, black area?
Sure.
A little bit of everything. So
are you telling me people don't believe in change until it happens and it happens pretty quickly?
I'm saying that the public opinion is the ultimate determinant of the policy direction that the country is going to go in. It does take time for politicians to wake up to reality. The public opinion on value for money, we've done the polling. 80% of South Africans support value for money as the first unambiguous top priority in all procurement spending. 20% say BEE points should trump it.
Okay.
80% say go value for money.
And did you ask it that way? You were like, value for money or BEE, which do you prefer?
We said there's
1.2
trillion rand being spent on public procurement. We gave three options. Option one, value for money, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Option two, value for money. If there's a tie, instead of flipping a coin, you give it to the black business.
Okay.
Option three, you're willing to pay extra to promote black business for the same goods and services. And the results showed 80%, 20% splits on value for money versus the premiums. But then within that 80%, there's a 50-50 split between those who want to say leave race completely out of it and those who say, no, we want to keep race but only as a tiebreaker. We don't want to pay extra for race. But if there is a tie and we're not paying extra, then let the black business get a boost. So what our value for money bill does, because we want to take something that's politically feasible and plausible and popular, mm-hmm. is we say you do value for money first. That's what the Zonda report right. recommends. But you keep race as a tiebreaker, amongst other things, for 3 years strictly, mm-hmm. and then that phases out. And then that way, you're giving sort of...
Which, by the way, was always meant to be the plan with BEE as well. It was meant to be sunset at some point yeah. with that. You know, you can't carry on. And I'd love to hear your opinion on what Solidaritate did with that billboard about race-based laws. Very contentious stuff. And there's still huge disagreement between people in academia, people who are political analysts, pundits, and so on. But we've got this G20 on the go at the moment. And this would be the most wonderful opportunity for this government to show off what they can do. Unfortunately, they've got nothing to show off. Nothing. Not even Joburg. This value, this just before we get into any of that, tell me what's in the value for money bill. Give me a couple of granular details here, because it's not just broad, wide-ranging, obvious things like value for money, transparency, accountability. Okay. What do you mean?
Before I do that, can I quickly just say something about the DA?
Yes, go on.
Okay, so because part of what's difficult about this conversation is that we're not just trying to get ANC politicians to see reason and see what the Zonda report recommended value for money and so on. We're also trying to get the DA to see reason.
A lot of people think that the Institute of Race Relations has some cozy relationship with the DA.
Not really. I mean, the I have been arguing to two DA people that – okay, so what have they done? A month ago, they got some news cycles, good attention with their bill, private member's bill by MP Matthew Cuthbert, their uh-huh. head of policy, to say, let's scrap BEE and public procurement. It's 1.2 trillion rand, just for context.
Sure.
That's a seventh. That's like a seventh of total GDP. So if you think every day of the week, like it's Monday.
No, hang on. Let me understand this. 1.27 trillion rand,
yeah.
which are we spending that on – the infrastructure, on government programs, on...
It's all goods and services. The state itself estimated that 40% of it is being wasted. That estimate came out quite a few years ago when they established a procurement office to try and reduce waste.
40% of it?
Yeah.
500 billion rand?
Yes.
Is wasted?
Wasted.
On cosmetic and politically motivated and just outright theft.
On overspending. On like you buy a mop for 300 rand instead
because
of 30
it's a
rand.
BEE company that's providing the mop.
Yes. So, well, the caps are legally – the BEE premium is legally capped at 25%. But what the Zonda report says, if you want to understand how a mop ends up costing 12,000 rand, what you need to understand is that it is very complicated to do a value for money deal. Like we're sitting in this space, there's cameras here, there's yeah. couches. Someone's had to buy all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can easily spend extra or save a lot if you get an expert to think very carefully about where to buy the microphones,
sure. yeah.
buy 10 instead of 5, da, da, da. It's complicated. The Zonda report said it gets even more complicated if on top of trying to get value for money, you're also asking the procurement official to pursue some other goal like BEE. And when it gets more complicated, that person's brain gets overwhelmed. Some of the time, 50% of the time on Zonda testimony, there's overspending by accident because yeah. people don't even know the rules. But the other 50% of the time, it's so complicated, no one can be effectively audited.
Mm-hmm.
If someone does deliberately overspend, it's very hard to find them out because you've created a thicket of red tape that makes real activity invisible. So Zondo said he didn't have a mandate to manage the budget. He had a mandate to end state capture. He gave the advice, page 797 in volume one of the state capture report.
I know you've read the whole thing.
I've read about 2,000 pages.
You're one of four people in the whole world who I know have read that.
I do like to read. He said you've got to max – he said two things. The first thing is identify your priority unambiguously. Don't tell me this is the most important and that is the most important. Yeah.
Two things. You can only have one priority.
Your top priority, there's one thing. And then he said, secondly, make it value for money because that's the best way to fight corruption. So that's our argument. The DA's response to this is to say, we want to get rid of BEE, which we think is a good idea, but they want to keep a deviation from value for money, a 20% deviation, the same as the ANC's deviation. And they want to direct it to United Nations social development goals, which include one of the examples they cite on the website, planting trees. To make matters more complicated, the ANC system, the current system, price gets 80 points and BEE gets 20 points. On the DA system, price gets 30 points and social development goals get 20 points. So that means...
And the rest?
It's some other stuff that's supposed to be designed towards getting value
for
money.
Where are they getting all these cuck ideas?
The United Nations and the Green Lobby and...
The DA must be one of the stupidest parties in the world if they're getting their cues from the United Nations, when almost anyone who is paying attention at the moment has realized that the United Nations has outlived its usefulness.
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, if these guys are setting the agenda...
I'm very sympathetic to parts of what the UN does, but the social development goals system is not simpler. The Zondo report thing was like, make it simpler.
Right.
Make someone who doesn't necessarily have a Harvard MBA be able to administer this thing in an effective and functional way. Let them be able to buy a mop at a cheap price. And the DA's thing, literally, it's a 260% premium cap. You can legally spend 260% extra buying laptops or mops or transformers.
Outrageous.
If the company that you're buying for plants trees.
Outrageous.
So we would like, the IFP, the DA, the PA, the
you'll
ANC.
You'll take all comers.
Anyone who wants to help South Africans fight state capture, which is ongoing,
yeah.
Who wants... to be compassionate about letting taxpayer money, that 1.2 trillion, actually go and help poor people who are the most in need of effective service delivery, mm-hmm. who wants business to grow, which is only possible in a system that is, where you're not wasting 500 billion rand per annum.
Outrageous.
You know, it's like for everyone, it'd be it's a huge win. And that 1987 thing, like the same way that the Group Areas Act was like obviously dead in the water, it took 10 years for it to actually come out there. I think in 10 years, if South Africa is still going, we're going to have a value for money procurement system. The thing that's going on right now is going to change. This idea is inevitable, but we would just like it to be taken up as quickly as possible.
So how do we ordinary citizens get behind this? People always like a cause. You know, everyone's a social activist on TikTok these days. They're all wearing kefirs and promoting, I don't know, minority tribal rights in Oklahoma. But this seems like something that most South Africans would get behind. And if there's a way for us to support it, we'd like to. What do we have to do?
Yeah, I haven't really thought of – we don't have an action campaign behind this.
Well,
first of all,
read it. That would be good. So you can go to the IRR's website.
Yes.
You can go and see it there.
I think that's a good idea. And I think if you are – look, especially if you're on social media or if you're an active citizen, like ask your local councillor – in the election, in the build-up to the 2026 election, ask anyone who wants your vote in that local election. If they become mayor, would you like them to spend 260% extra
mm-hmm.
on procurement for things to save the water crisis in Joburg or whatever because the company happens to plant trees? Or would you like to administer the city or the municipality that you're going to run in a value-for-money way? And I think that... that would be very helpful. You know, elections ultimately put the power in our hands, so use it.
So what do you think of the G20? It's all the talk of the town at the moment. Government are bending over backwards to put on a good show. It doesn't help that three of the G20, so we're now G17,
yeah.
Three of the countries have just said, we're not coming to your party.
Yeah, I think that's embarrassing and unfortunate. Gareth, I've got to admit, though, that solidarity billboard, I think I might be responsible.
How?
I did an interview with Solidarity in Pretoria about a month ago for mm-hmm. a documentary about Race to the Bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I said on camera that South Africa has the harshest race law in the world, mm-hmm. and that not enough people know that. And then afterwards, we were talking about it. They said, that's a good line. Is there another way you could put it?
Just by the way, sorry, I hate to interrupt you. People even mentioning that I'm interrupting you. There's so much I need to ask you. Let's just get back to first principles on this, because before you finish the story,
yeah.
this is an objectively true thing. You don't have to have an emotional reaction to it to know whether it's true or it's false. There are more laws that have racial classification and racial discrimination, and by discrimination I mean being able to say A or B, in South Africa at the moment than there were in the 1980s, early 90s.
So that is true. I would qualify that by
because
saying...
Because I know what's going to happen. Yeah. We're going to be fact-checked by someone.
Yeah.
They're going to say, Gabriel's talking shit, so clear it up for me.
So I want to say, though, that it's also objectively true that the race laws that we have today are not as
draconian.
They're not nearly as extreme. They're not as inhumane as the race laws in the 1980s. So this claim that I'm making is about the world today, about the 21st century. I started by saying on air, on camera with them, we have the harshest race law in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Apartheid was much harsher and much worse. Secondly, I'll say, like, it does seem pretty clear to me that we needed some form of race law, pro-black affirmative action, particularly in the beginning. Like, in the police, in the army, there were very clear credibility and legal accountability issues that could only really be solved in that way. Constant Viljoen, to mention him again, the last apartheid general, he founded the Freedom Front Plus. That guy was pro-BEE in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was pro-BEE in the 1990s because everyone knew we needed something like that.
Yeah.
However, today, as an objective measure, can I tell you the story of Jenila Naidu? I might have said this once before, but like, I really think all South Africans should know the story to understand the country we live in.
Go on.
So Jenila Naidu became a police officer in 1989, the year I was born, and she wanted to serve. Indian females were the last group to be allowed to serve in the police. They had only been allowed to serve in the police from about 1983. I think they were allowed to put the uniform on as part of the ending of apartheid. She rose up through the ranks and by the late 2000s applied to become a station commander in Krugersdorp, which is
– rough neighborhood.
Tough area, and it would have been salary level 14 out of 16, so three from the top, pretty good, pretty high level administrative thing because it covered a very wide base. And she was considered to be the best available candidate, and her recommendation was given to the National Commissioner of Police. She was refused the job on the basis that Indians were overrepresented at salary level 14 in Gauteng. There were 19 people at salary level 14 in Gauteng. None of them were Indian women. None of them were Indian.
Hmm.
So she said, hold on. There's zero Indians. But if you get one Indian, that'll be too much. Your ideal is zero. That is crazy.
Mm-hmm. It is crazy.
They said, that's not crazy. That's the law. So she said, I'm taking you to court. She went to court and she lost at the Supreme Court of Appeal. The government's argument was, I'm not making this up, you can go and look it up. The government's argument was, there are 19 people at your level now, and Indian women are about 0.7% of the population. So the ideal target for Indians at your level is 0.045.
Which means no people.
So we round that down to zero. The ideal target, I'm quoting, is zero. They said, but if we increase the staff level over time to 150, which is an increase of a factor of 780% increase, then in principle, we will be able to appoint an Indian woman without violating the Employment Equity Act's rule against overrepresentation. They said also, you might be able to move to KZN because we know that someone was appointed in KZN where there are Indians to a salary level 14 post in the last 2 years. On that argument, the Supreme Court of Appeal, in a unanimous judgment by the full bench, ruled that Janila Naidu did not face an absolute barrier and that the blocking of her promotion was lawful and valid. She obviously left the police force in despondency. That's one less person to protect your life and protect
much,
my life
poorer.
And help our country be better together. That is the law in our country. I then brought this up to the BEE commissioner twice, one on Mbuyiseni Ndlozi's show, Dr. Ndlozi's show, mm-hmm. where we had an hour and a half there. And Ndlozi ended up agreeing with me more than the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
And one on JJ Tabane's BEE Frankta dialogue, where we had the former president there and Parks Tower and so on, in Sandton 3 weeks ago. And Montana, the BEE commissioner, both times said, no, you're making it up. I said, dude, look it up. It's in the court record. Then he says, well, it's just anecdotal and it's isolated. So I got my office, IRO Legal, to dig up the statistics. How many times has there been overrepresentation, which would trigger this kind of a thing? Firstly, we looked up the stats and SAPs. There's no Indian senior managers in the police at all at this stage.
Right.
But then we said, like, let's dig more in a more granular fashion. Because if there's 50% black females, that's over 43%. So that means you can block the black female from getting promoted.
Yes.
And we've got court evidence to show that's happened. Under BEE, black females have been explicitly blocked from getting jobs in the police. So Montana says, but it just happened once or twice. Give me the data. So we go looking for the data. And we find that all of the data is legally required to be published by every minister in cabinet under Section 22.2 of the Employment Equity Act. You can also look that up. Every single year for every single business unit in every single organ of state in the country.
And let me guess, they haven't done it at all.
So we got the Clerk of Parliament on Monday to say that he did the double search and he said that has never happened in 25 years. Also not under the GNU. So all of those GNU ministers, you can go through all the political parties. Not one of them has adhered to the law section 22.2. Now to just make it the final bit of spice, I send that in a story to News 24 on Monday. I think it was Monday. And their opinions editor for Outside Opinion said, no, we can't publish the story that exposes that every minister in parliament, every minister in cabinet has violated their duty for the last 25 years to publish this information. She said, we can't publish it, I quote, because the article seems to punt IRR Legal too much.
God, it's hard to decide who's worse. The ministers who haven't done their job, the policies that clearly are becoming a rod for their own backs in this case, or the media organizations which insist on running cover for these guys. All three, you should be ashamed of yourself. That's all I could say. So that's a horrific story about how, you know, mindless application of bureaucratic rules and demography prevent good people from taking up leadership positions and fixing serious problems that need fixing.
It gets worse. As of until September 1st, 2025, this rule, which in law is called the Barnard Principle, and the Correctional Services Matter Constitutional Court said it can be applied against all eight race, gender pairs, black women, black men, colored women, colored men, all eight. That rule only applied in the public sector. As of September 1st, 2025, Regulation 910 of Minister Nomakosazana Met's regulations, promulgated earlier this year, applies it across everything in the private sector with 50 employees or more. It says over-representation must be prevented for any group, including black women.
So what would the government be able to do since September to a private company of, let's say, 60 employees? That is where there's overrepresentation
of any group.
The government can get involved.
So Nomakosazana Meth has
she must be on meth, by the way. I mean, it's such an obvious joke to make, but you shouldn't go into politics if that's your surname.
I feel. Well, you shouldn't go into politics if you're going to act like you're on meth.
Okay. So what is the government able to do?
So she has hired 10,000 interns who can be deputized as labor inspectors, and will hire another 10,000 by February next year. That is 20,000 human beings
that we have to pay for.
They have the power under the Basic Condition of Employment Act and the EEA to enter any business without a warrant, without announcing themselves, without calling the owner, to see for themselves if any of the information that they believe is relevant to the Employment Equity Act has not been represented accurately. So really? They can go with a pencil and go and put it through the hair of all of the staff and see if it falls out or stays in, to see if people who call themselves black, white, Indian, or colored really are what they consider
it's
themselves
Favut's
to be.
Last dream.
No, well, yeah.
I mean, this is Hendrik Favut is so excited about this idea, posthumously, of course.
Yeah.
But this is his dream. Yeah. Are we going to count the number of blacks and whites and coloreds? We're going to check that you exactly fit the bill in your own business, by the way, the company that you are running every day on the knife's edge, because this economy is not an easy place to work.
Hasn't grown since 2007.
And you are now going to have a nameless, faceless bureaucrat pitch up with a clipboard and evaluate your business because this minister thinks that she has the right to get involved. It's going to be hilarious. I mean, there are going to be a lot of dead interns buried under concrete all over the private sector. I mean, I look forward to it. I want to see what's going to happen when one of these interns pitches up at a scrap metal dealer's, for example, and says, oh, I'm sorry that it's you and your wife and your son that are running this business. And then he's going to say, you know, come over here and have a look at this enormous piece of steel machinery, and then squash.
Well, 20,000, you can't squash all 20,000. We're going to have to beat this in the courts.
You don't know scrap metal dealers.
But I think it's, you know, what they can do is the first fine, I think, starts at about 2% of revenue. Repeat offense, you
got. How are they going to get that?
10% of revenue. 10% of revenue would bankrupt, by our estimation, over 87% of businesses.
I want everybody who's watching this and listening to this show this morning, or if you do it at any stage in the next couple of weeks, think about what it took to start your business. Think about what it takes every day to keep your business going. Think about how you already have to, you called it a thicket of red tape earlier. I love that. How you have to duck and dive to get through this thicket of red tape. And now they've added this as well. It's like an obstacle course, but they also set your hair on fire. And you have to make it to the end of the obstacle course, not because you'll be punished or rewarded, but just to survive.
And can I tell you one bizarre thing about this? Because it really, I think South Africans really, most people really don't know how crazy the rules have become. So I give this address at the B Frank Dialogue in Sandton, and I talk about how hard this is crushing businesses, and about the Barnard Principle that Janelle and I do. And afterwards, I get a lot of grumpiness. I'm sitting next to Dali and Porfu and the B Commissioner Montana and so on. But afterwards, three people who work for BE consulting firms came up to me and said, dude, thank God someone's talking about this, because we are facing this. September 1 started. January 15th is the first report back period. It's not really going to start bankrupting businesses until 5 years. Some of the legal cases will emerge before that, because there's this like 5-year window, but you have to start reporting immediately and aim to get it achieved by 5 years. Anyway, they said, my favorite example, one guy said, I can't tell you which company, but we ran their numbers and we showed them what they have to do. And they came back to us and they're like, you can't be serious. And then we said, you get your in-house counsel to check. We'll get our third-party counsel that we use to check. Everyone checked. And the fact is that this big business, which is very close to where we are right now, in one salary band, they are only allowed to hire 500 white men. They are short. Everyone else is overrepresented. White men are underrepresented by 500.
Well, good. You want to play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. But this is the kind of counterproductive nonsense.
It's so dumb, dude. It's like no one wants this.
There's so little pragmatism here. So I mean, what often happens in South Africa is that the government tries things, but they can't execute them and people ignore them anyway, which I think is still the likeliest outcome here, is that people will be chased with shotguns out of business premises by the owners of those businesses, and the intern just won't go back, and they won't tell the people who ask them when they get back to the office, how was your day? They'll just say, fine, I cried into my McFlurry and then came back to the office because I couldn't face the fact that I had a shotgun pointed at my chin. That's what's going to happen in practical
I don't know.
Terms.
You know, if you're a listed company on the JSE,
those big companies.
I think for some companies, I think for the big companies, they're going to continue crushing people's careers.
Have they not bent over enough?
I think, look, here is a campaign that we are looking to lead. I think that the best way to put sand in the gears is going to be for all employees to refuse to racially classify. Mm-hmm. The EEA-1 form that everyone is going to be legally obliged by regulations to fill out doesn't give you an other option. It only says black, white, Indian, or colored. By the way, Indian, like not even Chinese. we know from looking at Stats SA data that even when people are asked with no real context, like what race are you, hundreds of thousands of people refuse to classify themselves every time.
Most of the people who were objectors to governments all over the world when they try to classify you as X, Y, or Z, probably to discriminate. That's the only reason they would do that.
Yeah.
They're never asking you because they want to be your friend, and they only choose friends from a certain band. You would want to choose other or to cross the whole section out.
Yeah. So we have consulted legal experts and prepared a sort of a legal opinion. I can't give legal advice. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not being paid by anyone. But to propose legal opinion that shows that the Constitution guarantees your right to conscientious objection.
Right.
It guarantees your right to remain silent about your race at work.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who refuse to classify themselves, we believe strongly, have the Constitution to back them up. And that in turn will have the effect of making the whole process very hard to administer for the other side in a way that doesn't require putting a shotgun in anyone's face.
Sorry, I jumped straight to option B.
And so we strongly encourage that. And I think hundreds of thousands of people are going to do that, especially when they realize, and this is a bit of a media complaint, but it's like the way that unpopular policies get maintained is by having a bit of a cover-up around it. And it's not a deliberate conspiracy. It's more like, you know, elites kind of think we know better. People get too nervous. They won't really understand the full details. So we just won't tell them any of the story at all. But if people knew about Naidu, if they knew about how this is being applied in the private sector, they knew there's one business where they only allowed 500 white men, I don't think anyone would really support the system. And I think more and more people would opt out in the simplest way, which is just refusing to classify at work. And when we're at work, you know, it is actually a nice thing to be able to tell a joke about a race or whatever. But the nicest thing is to put the team first, is to put the excellence of your product first. And the Springboks are a nice example for us. But actually, there are thousands of businesses where people come together from different religions, absolutely, different races, different classes.
Yeah.
But when they're at work, they're together, bonded by one mission to go forward. And that is a nice way to be. If someone asked me, if like a government official in Ireland said, like, are you a Catholic or Protestant? You have to fill this out. Like, I don't think that I'd want to fill that out. If someone came here with some religiously divisive thing and they said, what box? I would not want to tick a box at work, you know?
Absolutely.
I think that it's just not the place for it. We know to leave some things at the door, to compartmentalize our lives in order to strive together. And I think that that's you know, part of the reason that religious protection, conscientious protection, that's why it's actually a very serious part of civilization that has been going for hundreds of years in constitutional democracies. And yeah, it's important to try and leverage that. Yeah.
So Yonder in the comments says, until the people of South Africa see a need for change, we'll not see much happen to the status quo. Change is linear and yet never happens until the time is right for it to occur. The IRR is taking us a step closer to change. What else are you guys working on? Because there always are many cogs moving at the same time there. Next, I love the value for money thing. I love that this BEE thing is becoming a political. It's becoming a very deep source of discomfort for the government, whether they admit it or not.
Yeah.
You know, when Donald Trump in the White House is telling you your policies are shit and he doesn't mince his words.
No, he doesn't.
And there are serious consequences to his words because he's not a man who just says things, unlike most politicians in the world. There is a cost that comes with that. How do you see things either improving or not improving? What kind of pressure are you bringing to bear? What pressure can the rest of us bring to bear?
So there are a couple of things. One thing is like a slight pivot. Like next week, we'll be going to Cape Town for our first trial date on the expropriation. Act matter, the expropriation without compensation, which was, I think, the first legislation that drew American attention.
I mentioned it this morning earlier, but didn't Paul Mashatile just reiterate this week that they're not going to turn around on expropriation without compensation?
So the ANC is interesting because you've got different factions seeming to grow around their question of how to deal with this. One side is you've got some ministers who are starting to say, like, no, we are going to turn into Zimbabwe if we go down this road. And the other side is saying, so, but we think the courts need to settle that. And part of what I spent quite a few months doing this year was digging into court precedent to find actual recent court judgments to do with I can put it like this. One of the things that's been overlooked is that our courts have actually looked at expropriation without compensation in the apartheid context because we've got a land reform thing. And so they've said, how do we apply Section 25 of the Constitution on property rights to thinking about what would have been just an equitable compensation back in the day? You know, there was one colored family that was bought out forcibly in the Cape area.
When are we talking?
In the 80s. In 77, I think it was.
Okay.
And they got paid, I think it was 12,000 rand.
Mm-hmm.
But the house's market value was 35,000 rand. Mm. And so the court had to ask itself, Section 2.1 of the relevant legislation says that if you are going to be eligible for a land benefit scheme today, it must be the case that you did not receive just an equitable compensation as conceived by Section 25.2 of the Constitution at the time that you were expropriated in the first instance.
So you were underdone.
You were underdone. So the courts had to figure out, what does it mean to say you were underdone? Gareth, you'll be amazed to figure out what they said. The court said, if you get less than market value, if you lose some value that you held in your hands, mm-hmm. then you were underdone to the extent. So the courts have answered the question, what is just and equitable compensation? It is the amount that compensates you for the value in your hands of the property that you've lost. Right. That's a beautiful finding.
So lo and behold, property has value,
yes.
and we can determine the value of that property. And if you are dispossessed of that property, you are entitled to recompense.
Yeah,
who would have guessed?
And all the social justice warriors who promote land reform, and who promote expropriation without compensation, none of them really thought about that fact, or about the fact that once people have land, the land reform beneficiaries, you also want them to be protected from expropriation at below market
value.
Otherwise,
it carries on ad infinitum, exactly. like an infinite mirror.
So, and one of the cases that I'm trying to raise funds for, we're a third of the way there, is the CPA Amendment Act, where 400,000 black land reform beneficiaries with 2.5 million hectares of land, mostly quite good land, it's a very serious chunk of the country's land reform system, have had their property rights eroded. As of last year, they can no longer sell, lease, mortgage, or otherwise encumber their own land without the special permission of a registrar.
In the interests of whom?
Well, 12 of them that I've spoken to say that this is a good way to set up more incentives for us to have to bribe the registrar. We can't do anything with our own land unless
we get it. So again, the bureaucracy is at work here.
Imagine you can't sell your own house. It's not about Blue Book. It's not about have you paid the rates and taxes. It's like he has to come and say, I think it's in your best interest to sell your own house. You don't get to make that choice for yourself. It's so belittling of these land reform beneficiaries. We want to have that struck down. We're going to take that to court.
Good.
And we're mounting a challenge on the employment equity thing, this no race classification thing. There will be a case that comes out of that, and we're preparing to defend the right of South Africans not to classify at work. So we're quite busy on the legal front there with
it sounds like it.
There's six more cases, but I won't I can't.
Wow.
I want to sue Minister Meth for concealing the fact that the national minimum wage last year was found by the government's own economic experts to have destroyed 220,000 jobs.
Yes.
And
say that again for the benefit of the slow people at the back and ministers. When you set a minimum wage, it costs jobs.
Depending on the level.
No. Well, I mean, in this economy.
Yeah, yeah.
In this economy, people are prepared to work, and sometimes they're going to come in working at below minimum wage. And there are people who are prepared to pay below minimum wage. But it's better than starving to death.
And 100%.
When the government has pie-in-the-sky ideas, sometimes the unintended consequences of those ideas
have extraordinarily dire consequences for the people who they didn't think they would affect.
The estimate was for going back to 2019 when the minimum wage came into effect, it looks closer to 420,000 jobs. There are like the scale of uncertainty gets bigger the more you go back, and COVID creates some uncertainty. But that was the government's economic experts that they hired out, and 220,000 in the last year alone. And part of it really is the level. So we have set the level so high that it's at the median wage, which means 50% of people, roughly speaking, earn below minimum wage. So like in other countries, the minimum wage is like 20% of the median. So in South Africa's terms, like if you set the minimum wage at like 2,000 rand a month, that would be one thing. But we set it at 5,000. Anyway, so the minister's got a legal obligation to give the relevant facts to the people. Once again, the corrupt system is kept in place by hiding information from the body politic, and we want to address
it. I'm just trying to figure out whether this minister, Nomakhosazana Meth, she's now currently Minister of Employment and Labour.
Yeah.
Before that, she was just in the National Assembly.
Yeah.
Does she have any experience in basic economics? No. I mean, I'm not being sarcastic, but maybe she's, without us knowing, gone and studied deeply, imbibed at the well of I don't know, market economics.
I think she's deeply imbibed at the well of how to cover up information. She has been one of the most successful ministers at keeping information that is publicly required to be known off the table. And look, I mean, her predecessor, Tulla Sinclesi, was...
Tulas, I remember him.
Probably the most potent. I thought he was the most dangerous man in cabinet.
Really?
Yeah, he helped Satu go... He increased their membership by an order of magnitude.
Didn't Tulas, he was the one who also lied about the fire pool.
He was involved in that lie.
He was
lie.
Involved in that lie, yeah. Too, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He was a senior ranking member of the South African Communist Party, and he had, I think, a very rigorous ideological training in a way of looking at the world that has been proven to cause death and destruction every time.
Oh, we're talking about Marxism.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that Meth has – I don't know that she has the same depth of commitment.
Brainwashing.
But I think she has sort of filled in those shoes without changing direction very much.
Well, I've just seen something interesting about her. This is in her Wikipedia, you know, which is usually Wikipedia, not always objective, but
pretty vanilla.
Yeah. They say she is one of dozens of children born to a man called Cromwell Diko, a prominent politician in the Transkei. Dozens of children. Family values, I suppose. All right, that's all we got time for, everybody. We're going to leave it on that note. I want to know who these dozens of children are that this one man, Cromwell Diko, fathered. But you know, it's probably too much information. It's like you're reading the Zondo report. You're the only person I know who definitely went through it cover to cover. Gabriel Krause, it's such a pleasure to see you. I'm sorry we didn't get to go in 500 other directions, but it's better to have you here and get through a little bit and have some of the conversation I'm so desperate to have than to have none of it. I wish you luck with the Value for Money bill, and anybody who wants to support the Institute of Race Relations and their excellent work, go and see what they're up to. Their website's full of information, and they do post regularly. So keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good stuff. Really is. So important. A lot of people talking and some people doing. And the IRR is definitely doing and lifting more than its fair share of heavy things. All right, everybody, we will see you on Friday next week. Have an awesome weekend. Be good if you're not, take photos. And let us know if you've found anything interesting that you want us to talk about, people that you'd like us to interview, people that you want to bring into the studio. You know where to get hold of us, right? James, give them your email address. Have you got it? Yeah, just put it on the screen. It's fine. And then you can feel free to bombard him with all kinds of other useless information. Someone sent me a parody song this week, which is so terrible I won't play it. Someone else suggested that they should be a regular correspondent for the show, but when I saw what they looked like, I almost threw up on my laptop. So no, that won't be necessary. But feel free to send these things to James. James@thereal-network.com. Thank you to my guests, to Gabriel Krause, to Monwabisi Tete, to Siya Sangweni, Ben and Leanne, and most especially to you. We will see you next week.